Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Sunday, November 18th, 2018. This is episode 1542. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Brex, the first corporate credit card for startups. Get the card free, and if you're a Twit listener, get Brex card fees waived forever at brex.com/twit. And by Prilock Security. Teach your employees how to keep your company secure by avoiding phishing emails, candy drops, and social engineering. Show them how and why hackers attack with training from Prilock Security. Go to prilock.com/twit and use the promo code LEO to save 30%. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Ooh, hello. How are you? Way, hey, as they say. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater. We're going to talk digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number if you want to talk high tech with me. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still reach us. Oh, it's easy. All you have to do is call via Skype or something like that. You know, one of those voice over the internet things. You should still be able to make a free call. 8888-ASK-LEO. I should also mention our website, because that's where everything I talk about ends up. And so that way you don't have to write things down as you're driving along and listening. If you hear something you like, techguylabs.com. techguylabs.com. I'm looking because it's the weekend. You don't need heavy news. There's enough heavy news in the world. I'm looking for something positive and interesting. And I'm scrolling in the tech news. I could talk about, the pwn-to-own hacking competition where the Galaxy S9, the iPhone 10, and the Xiaomi Mi 6 all fell to hackers. I could talk about that. I could talk about why quantum computing will never happen, or how Alphabet, Google's life sciences company, Verily, has decided they're not going to be able to make a contact lens that measures your glucose level for diabetics. We talk about, and this is the problem with technology. There's a lot of promise, a lot of promises that never materialized. So 5 or 6 years ago, we all covered it. Oh, this is exciting. Google's working on a glucose measuring contact lens for diabetics. Turns out, no, it doesn't work. You can't really accurately measure glucose levels in the tears. We thought we could. Yeah. It's all over the place. Doesn't have any. So not only are they saying, it's hard to do, they say there are massive and potentially insurmountable technical and scientific problems. And of course, when it comes to diabetes, every company is really desperately looking for some sort of non-invasive way to measure blood sugar. Because if they could do that, there's something like 14 million diabetics in the United States, whether it's, type 1 diabetes, where your gland doesn't make insulin, or type 2 diabetes, which is essentially what most of us have, the vast majority from years of eating sugar, insulin resistance. But either way, that's a big business. Apple's mentioned it. At one point, Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, was at an event wearing a Apple Watch, and he said, he just casually dropped, this has a glucose meter in it. Isn't that cool? And everybody got all excited, but nothing, no. So a lot of times technology makes some big promises and just doesn't deliver. This next story might come under that rubric. I don't know. It's a pretty big promise. FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, on Thursday approved the application from SpaceX to deploy, I think, 4,400 more satellites into space for global internet access. Elon Musk. He's Elon Musk. He's at it again. He's boring holes under Los Angeles. He says we're going to be living on Mars in a few years, and now he wants to put a total of 12,000 satellites. They're not very big, baseball-sized satellites. 12,000 of them around the Earth in low Earth orbit to provide internet to every square inch of the planet's surface. Wow. I guess it wouldn't be every square inch because it would have to be outside. You know, your GPS doesn't work in a parking garage or indoors because it can't see the satellites, and I think it would be the same thing. They say the technology, one of the problems with satellite internet, and you all know that if you've used any of this, you know, the Hughes Direct PC, or if you've used, you know, any of the satellite internet solutions, that there's a lot, the big problem with that is latency. The time it takes for your signal to get to the satellite and then get back to the internet connection the satellite has and then get back up to the satellite, then get back down to you, those round trip times are long, sometimes measured in seconds. Mr. Musk says, well, we can get it down to 25 milliseconds, which is maybe faster than your home internet. Low enough latency that you could play video games, you could do Skype talk. 25 milliseconds is really slow. By the way, it's not just SpaceX. The FCC also approved applications from three other companies, Kepler, Telesat, and LeoSat. I happen to be a fan of LeoSat. These are all these companies are trying to desperately, as quickly as possible, create, you know, they're in a race, space race, but a space race to provide internet to the world. Now, there is, of course, this issue of space junk, and the FCC is making sure that these applicants all have plans for what to do with the satellites when they wear out, most of which involve launching it into the atmosphere to burn up. Apparently, according to the Washington Post, the U.S. military tracks 500,000 individual pieces of flying space junk, including a screwdriver that an astronaut on a EVA accidentally dropped, that's been circling the Earth at 21,000 miles an hour for the last 35 years. You wouldn't want to run into that on a dark night. And it's always a dark night in space. In space, nobody can hear you crash into a screwdriver. Nevertheless, we're going to put in another 12,000. Elon's going to put another 12,000 satellites up there. You know why this is good? I think he'll do it. He says, by the way, this will happen in the next few years. They launch them pretty quick because each launch has many, many satellites. It's like a MIRV. It has many satellites inside one big launch vehicle, and it just releases them a bit at a time. It's going to take about 6 years to build the whole network. You know, that's 2024. 2024, imagine, I mean, there are things that happen in technology that just change everything. And one of them is internet, high-speed internet everywhere. I think when the iPhone came out in 2007, we knew it was a big deal. We didn't understand how this would completely change society. But it did. Global internet, you know, the availability to get any fact anytime quickly or make any purchase or see any cartoon or tweet and a tweet without any thought at all has been magnified. But imagine if everywhere in the world, not just the developed nations, but everywhere in the world has access to this same high-speed internet. Wow. I imagine that would be a similar transformation. And that is just around the corner. So is this one of those things like glucose-sensing contact lenses that's a lofty promise that's impossible to reach? I don't think so. I think this one might actually happen. We've tried it before. I mean, remember the satellite phones? And we were going to, you know, this has been tried before. It's hard to make money at this business. We'll see. I mean, that would be the greatest tragedy of all. I think the technical problem is surmountable. You can launch these 12,000 satellites. You can connect them to the internet. What would be tragic is if there's no business plan. If they're up there, but nobody's going to pay for it, then that's kind of a problem. That's the unknown. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. Let's get to the phones. Kim Schaffer's here answering them. We'll talk to you right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And in the studio with me, well, kind of not with me, across from me, the other side of the room from me, Kim Schaffer.
But through the magic of technology, I'm looking right at you.
The phone angel. We give you the big studio, and you're sitting right next to the air purifier, so the air is fresh. No smoke in there.
I don't see it today, but it's got to be somewhere.
You think they moved it?
They might have.
They might put it in the boss's office.
They might have.
I want the air freshener in my office.
It was in here yesterday, but...
Yeah. Well, it's going to get the whole building.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you have been answering the phones. Phone angel?
Yes.
Phone angel.
Phone angel.
Phone angel. Who should I...
Charlie. Oh, Charles. Charlie's Angels? Charles in Virginia Beach.
Hello, Angel.
He wants to upgrade to a Mac Mini, but he doesn't know what kind of display to use with it. So, I think,
you're
going to spend somebody's money.
I love it.
All right.
Thank you, Kim. Hello, Charles. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I'm a ham radio operator and a big fan of the network, so I appreciate you taking my call.
What's your call sign?
Kilo Alpha 3, Sierra Tango Mike.
Now, I have to remember all those things. I think it's...
I'm a little rusty, old advanced operator myself.
Whiskey 6, Tango, Whiskey Tango, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
What? Well, anyway, great to talk to you. What can I do for you? Yeah.
So, first of all, I will join the long list of people. Thank you for helping me spend my money. And so we were looking to upgrade our 27-inch iMac. And the Mac Mini, I've heard you were raving about, so definitely like that. We like the 27-inch screen, but trying to figure out an affordable screen the same size. And not a lot of people talk about the ultrafines, but it seems kind of pricey. So trying to think, what do you recommend? What's a good affordable screen?
So Apple's pushing the ultrafines. They even sell them in the store because they don't currently make another monitor. They have said that they're going to make one next year with the new Mac Pro. But Apple monitors tend to be extra expensive. And the ultrafine is a 5K monitor, which is higher resolution than you have and probably than you need. It's a nice LG display. And it's well over $1,000.
Yeah.
So let's do better than that. And the good news is you're in a really good market for monitors. The prices have tumbled for monitors. And one of the things I would do, I have an iMac as well, and I've been tempted by this Mac Mini because... Well, they got good processors in it. You can put a goodly amount of RAM, up to 64 gigs in there. I wouldn't load up the hard drive because it has 4 Thunderbolt 3 ports, which means you could put an external Thunderbolt 3 hard drive that would actually be faster probably than the internal hard drive, and on and on and on. And so it's got all the connectivity you want, a full-size Ethernet port, HDMI port. That HDMI port and the Thunderbolt 3 ports means you can drive almost any monitor on the market today. I would be tempted to look at one of the wide monitors, the 34-inch monitors. They're the same height as your 27, but they go out in wings. And there are a lot of companies that sell these. LG does. I would look at a Dell UltraSharp. The Dell has some very aggressive prices. They have two different levels of monitor, the higher accuracy of the color, it costs more. Not necessarily that the monitor looks better. So this is an important distinction. If you're a photographer or you're editing video, then the accuracy of the screen and the gamut, the range of colors it can reproduce, is important. But if you're not, if you're just using it as you would a regular computer, then you don't need to buy the high-end screen. You can get a less expensive screen. So the Dell UltraSharp 34-inch is at Dell $800, but you can get that's the other thing. There'll probably be some good Black Friday prices on these as well. You can get a less expensive Dell 27-inch for $600, but you can go down from that. I mean, they have if you're not set on getting the absolute highest quality monitor, you can get it probably down to $300. So I think that's where I would go first, is at least look at the Dell monitors and see, you know, which is the best. And remember, you're going to either be connecting it via that HDMI port or the USB-C/Thunderbolt. And there are Thunderbolt monitors, but there are not a lot of them, and they tend to be very expensive. So probably you're just going to want an HDMI monitor.
Yeah, so listen to you, and you all talk about the whole 4K versus UHD yesterday. So that's
I mean, are you going to watch TV on this guy?
No, I don't think so. Like you said, it's more of the small office, home office kind of use. So that's why I'm dialing up. It makes a difference for that, for what we're doing, just simple home office kind of use.
Yeah, so you definitely don't need to spend a lot of money on a what they call a wide gamut monitor. You can get away with a lot less. The Wirecutter picked HP's Z27 as the best 27-inch monitor for color accuracy. And that's available $533 at Amazon. So
that's a
pretty good price. But you can, if you don't need 4K, you can go a lower resolution and get a $300 version of the same monitor. I would look at the Wirecutter. They seem to really like those HP monitors. I haven't tried them, but HP does make good gear. Dell makes good gear. LG, Samsung, all of these guys will have fairly comparable monitors. You can almost just price shop on these.
All right. Well, appreciate it, dear Leo. Thank you. I know you guys have been watching all your reviews the last couple of weeks.
Thank you.
It looks like it's definitely excited now they got the updated Mac Mini out.
Did you get it already?
No, I've been shopping. Kind of what our budget is, but my biggest questions were the number of ports and the displays and that kind of stuff, and probably going to upgrade the printer to one of those Epson Echo tanks.
Oh, man. I am spending your money.
Thank
That's
you.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for sponsors, you know, supporting our sponsors. I think that's great.
Yeah.
Apple is not a sponsor, probably never will be. They don't seem to like me very much. But I have to say, I think the Mac Mini is the most interesting of the new computers they announced.
We have a couple of Seagate 5 terabyte external drives.
Oh, perfect.
Too. I know you talk about having the smaller internals and hooking up an external drive.
I think
there.
That's fine.
That may be the way to go.
Yeah.
So.
Remember, those Seagates are USB 3, which probably is fast enough, certainly for a data drive. You put Mac OS and your apps on the internal drive, 128 gigs is plenty for that. And then your data is on an external drive, and that's fine. And you can have multiple ones because Thunderbolt lets you daisy chain them and all of that stuff. So, I have to say, I think this is the only thing that you're missing on this, and it's not going to matter for day-to-day work, is graphics performance. It doesn't have a very fast GPU in it. You can use an external GPU if down the road you want to do gaming or something like that. This is I think they've done a beautiful job. An Ethernet port, 4 Thunderbolt 3 ports, HDMI, 2 USB 3.1 Type-A ports. I mean, this has got all the connectivity that's missing from the Mac laptops. I guess they just took all the ports out and put them on the Mac Mini. But a good price, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, I wouldn't probably, they charge a lot for the SSDs. He even has a headphone jack. What? I'd look at the i5, so you'd probably assume that's going to be $1,100. And with the i5, you get 256 gigs. I think that's actually pretty. That's pretty much the one you get. It's the $1,000 one. I actually like the idea of having the flexibility of choosing your own monitor, frankly. Our show today brought to you by Brex. If you're a business, a small business, I know this intimately as a small business owner, you need credit. You need a credit card. Brex is the first corporate credit card. I set it up about a month ago, and I love this. For startups, with a 5-minute online application, underwriting based on the cash in your bank account, Brex can offer your company 10 to 20 times higher limits than other corporate credit cards, and there's no personal liability. I set up my Brex card. I would show it to you, but then you could steal the number, so I won't. I set up my Brex card, and I love it. And by the way, rewards tailored to business. You got to have rewards. You got a credit card, right? The Brex card gives you high multipliers on services you use the most in business. You get a 7x multiplier on rewards if you're using ride sharing, Uber or Lyft. 3x on restaurants and travel, 2x on software. There's no limit on how many points you can earn. And this is the best part. Points can be redeemed for statement credit on transactions. Love that. They've got exclusive offers, too, with some of the best technology brands like AWS, Google, Salesforce. You use WeWork for your satellite office? WeWork, too. Brex underwrites your company, not you. This is important. As a small business person, I don't want to take on any liability. You don't have any complicated, painful paper applications, no personal liability. They simply use the cash raised by your business to extend credit. That means they don't look at your credit score, their social security number, your security deposit is not required. They're powered by Visa. It's a Visa card. You can instantly issue, and we did this, cards to employees. You can set limits. You control spend via virtual cards. I love that. You know I love that. Brex offers employees instant access to online virtual credit cards with physical credit cards sent in the mail shortly thereafter. Every employee can have a corporate card with real-time limits that can be adjusted by an administrator. I love it. I get a text message, and then I take a picture of the receipt at the table, send it to them, and it's automatically matched to the transaction. They say, this was it, right? And you say, yes, that goes into the – it's just great. Join the thousands of startups and tech companies who use Brex to manage their growing business needs and earn valuable rewards while doing so. You can get the card free. TWIT listeners get Brex card fees waived in perpetuity forever. BREX.com/TWIT. BREX.com/TWIT. We thank Brex for their support. Big Pee-wee rocking the house. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, back to the phones we go. Line one, Neil in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, Neil.
Morning. Good morning, Leo. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well. How are you?
Great. I just want to say, I saw your mom the other day, and she was charming. Hope you put her into the Christmas system.
I was just thinking, because we have to record some Christmas shows for our podcast. Some of them are on Tuesdays, and some of them are on so that means some of them are on Christmas Day, and some of them are on New Year's Day. And I was just thinking it'd be kind of fun to do a roundtable of all the hosts' moms. Because,
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, my mom's 85. She's smart as a whip. And often people, and I know she resents this, and I kind of try not to do it. People like me will always say, well, can your mom use it? Is like that's the test for mom being a shorthand for the idiot user. And my mom is actually, she's pretty sophisticated when it comes to technology. So I don't want to say that. Both my mom and dad actually love technology. So I think it'd be kind of good to show all the moms and how smart they are. So thank you. I'll pass it along to Mary. She loves doing it. She said she's 85, so she really had to. She was on for half an hour on our iOS Today show. You can see that at twit.tv/iOS. And she said, I slept for 2 days afterwards. She was so exhausted. What can I do for you, Neil?
Sure. Well, that brings my latest spending spree that you and the sponsors have put me into. Well, I bought the new iPad Pro 11-inch to replace a 10.5-inch iPad.
I think a very good choice. It's about twice as fast as the old one, yeah.
But here's what I got the other day, which is I was advised by Cox Cable, which is my provider, that I could now have Gigablast speed.
Oh, you lucky dog. Yeah.
But now I have Gigablast speed. So two quick questions here. One, I'm getting about 850 megabytes down instead of a full gigabyte.
No, that's about right. That's
normal.
There's overhead. Yeah, that's totally normal. We have 10 gigabits here in our studio, but my Ethernet connector on my iMac, for instance, is a gigabit, as most Ethernet connectors are, and it gets about 850, 800, 900. It's not. It's just there's overhead. It's not. It's all. There's some cost to it, but believe me, 850 megabits a second. That's pretty good. That's like 100 megabytes a second. That's very good.
So this brings me to my next question. So I thought, well, great, I'm going to save some money from paying more for the service, but I will drop my cable, cable TV and their DVR.
Yeah.
And not cloud service, but TV service over the internet. But I had to figure out which service to get.
Well, you're in Phoenix. I would first place I would go. There's a number of them. Sony has one, PlayStation, or Sony, some called Sony View or PlayStation View. Sling has one, Sling TV. But the one I actually like is the one from YouTube. If you go to tv.youtube.com, it's, I think, $40 a month, and it has locals. It also has a built-in DVR. In fact, it has a DVR for up to six different people. So each one can have their own collection. I love the interface. You see live streaming on it, so you can see what's actually on any given channel. It doesn't have locals for every market. I'm pretty sure it does for Phoenix, though. So that the good news is you can try all of these usually for a week, maybe longer, for free. And so that would be one thing to do is to try these and see. Now, YouTube TV has an app for your iPad, so that's the good news. PlayStation View probably does as well. Sling TV probably does as well. I tried a bunch of these. There's, you know, AT&T has one called DirecTV Now, which when I tried it when it first came out, and maybe that wasn't fair because it was terrible then, but AT&T admitted that they were having, you know, problems keeping up with demand. I'm sure that's fixed up. Sling TV apparently has a two-month trial, according to our chat room. I made that in our chat room. And it's $24 a month. But remember, the way that most of them do this is tiered, just like your cable company. So they'll show a low price, but then you have to see what you get for that price. And if you want additional channels or additional content, you may be paying more. For instance, I think YouTube TV offers Showtime and HBO as well for an upsell. But so you take a little shopping, but you can absolutely do it. It's also worth looking at the quality. I would not probably want to watch YouTube TV on a 4K TV screen. It isn't really quite high def, and that's probably because it's streaming. It might be on yours. You just have to try it and see. But my experience is that it's a little bit lower def than I would like compared to the cable. Right. Yeah.
Right. Well, I haven't picked it out yet. I was looking at DirecTV Now because they had MSNBC and they have HBO for $5 a month, and it's about $45. I haven't tried it yet. But
it's
my
worth...
experience in the past with Sling TV was that it was not very good quality. But
yes.
I had less speed at the time.
That's exactly why I would say this is a good time to take advantage of all their free trials. And I did at one point did four or five of them. But you just have to remember to cancel at the end of the period. Otherwise, you'll have more subscriptions than you really want. MSNBC, CNN, and Fox News are on YouTube TV. What you get, the basic cable channels you get are often odd. They have BBC World News. They have Oxygen. They have E! Sci-Fi Channel. But those packages vary. One of the things I have to have, and I, you know, won't subscribe to any service without Turner Classic Movies because I like old black and white movies, especially in late night. And they have that, but not all of these services do. So you have to kind of figure out what do I want? You know, am I a Walking Dead fan? Do I need AMC? And then see if those, because they don't offer a universal, there's no one thing that they all do well. I'm able to watch football, which I like, NFL football on YouTube TV, and I think that's pretty nice because, you know, when I'm at work. That's the other thing about these is you can use them somewhere else. You're not just stuck to the house. So if you want to watch your Phoenix locals while you're traveling, you can do that.
I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. And have a great Thanksgiving, by the way.
You too. Thank you so much. And thanks for the kind words about Mom. I'll pass them along. She always says afterwards,
"Take care.
How was I? Was I okay? Did I do well?" And I make sure to pass along fan mail. That way she knows how well she, because she's not going to believe me. Of course she did, Mom. You were awesome. She's not going to believe anything I say. But people do. My mom is quite a character. Paul in Louisville, Kentucky. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Paul.
Hello.
Hello.
Leo, how you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Just fine. I just want to pass on the same thing about your mother.
Oh,
I haven't watched the iOS show that you that.
You have to watch it. Yeah, this week's iOS Today. Oh man.
Yeah, I just am a big fan of hers. But anyway, I wanted to ask you about a HP laptop about 2009 from Best Buy.
Yeah,
and. At the time, they had a coupon for the upgrade to the 7, so I did that.
Okay.
Well, whenever 10 was available, I did that also.
Good.
So here's the thing that's unique about this laptop that I don't think I've seen much of. It has two bays, two hard drive bays.
That's nice.
And what I was thinking about doing was getting a wire cutter, the wire cutter SSD recommendation, and putting it in there. And but here's the big thing I want to ask you is that can I run Windows 10 on that and also Windows 10 on the other drive?
So you want, why would you want Windows 10 on two different drives?
Well, because I like the idea of that everything is in place on the drive that I have now. That
okay.
Is, I want,
so you want like a clean install on one and then have a more messed up install?
I want a clean 10 on one.
Yeah.
And then
yeah, you can do that. The HP, once you install 10 on the HP, Microsoft knows, and they'll let you change drives. That's not a problem at all. They know which machine you're using, and that shouldn't be a problem. The way it's called, Microsoft calls that an entitlement. And once you authorize a Windows 10 on a machine, and it bases this, and Microsoft's never been completely forthright in how it does it, but it bases it on some sort of calculation based on the hardware you have. But changing the hard drive does not mean it's a different machine. If you change the motherboard and network card, it might say, oh, that's a different machine.
But they would allow me to, the question I have, would they would allow me to use the same Windows 10? I wouldn't have to buy a separate Windows 10 for
yes.
that new.
No, you would not.
Okay.
One Windows 10 for both drives is fine.
Can I ask you a couple of opinions quickly?
Yeah.
I've got, for years, I've used a LastPass. And I've been kind of leery about doing this, and can you recommend it or not recommend it? Have you ever done the thing on LastPass that enables you to change all your passwords at one time?
Yeah, it's not perfect, but it does. It's not LastPass's fault. It's to the degree that the site that you're using makes it kind of automatable, it will automate it. But what it'll say is, well, I can't do this automatically. You're going to have to help me here. But so if you have thousands of them, that may be a fairly long, drawn-out session. So you might want to do it a chunk at a time. But, yeah, no, it's great. The automated system works pretty well on many sites. And I understand what you're afraid of is that it'll change the password and not record it.
Yeah.
And that is a potential risk, but almost all sites have a I forgot system that you can use. Just make sure you know your email is correct and you're using an email that you actually have access to. I don't think I've ever had that happen, but that's always, you know, that's always a possibility that it will, you know, the JavaScript will get interrupted somehow, because what it does is it monitors the change and then it says, oh, you changed your password, you want to record this, and you say yes, but it does that with a pop-up.
I keep a record like this, you know, you have that feature where you can export your data and into a file where you can see everything, and in case something happened, I would have the passwords that I could go back to if I needed them. But I didn't know it would be just cause a lot of problems to do that. I just want to ask you one other quick opinion, okay?
Yeah.
Last time I called you, I talked about the possibility of having Richard Stallman as a triangulation.
I will try. He is famously prickly.
here's my opinion, okay?
Yeah.
I want you to agree with me or not. If I ever had the chance to talk to him, this is the thing I would love to ask him. I'd say, Richard, you complain about everybody calling it Linux, but I think that you are the reason more than anything else for it, for that confusion, because you are unable to create your own kernel. That is, you could have had a.
That's
GNU
right.
Kernel.
They tried. They wanted them. They wanted them to create their own kernel. Yeah.
Everybody called it Linux.
Right.
And I just think that he's wrong on that. But he also stresses something else. He says GNU / Linux. Why is it? Why could it not just be GNU Linux?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Wait, we will try to get him on. I've interviewed him. I interviewed him on the Screensavers many years ago, and it was a challenge because he insisted that tech TV in general stop calling it Linux and call it GNU / Linux.
He lost that battle, don't you think?
Yeah, I understand his point, which is that when you get a Linux distro, by far the bulk of the software you're running is Free Software Foundation GNU Linux GNU. So his point is that it's just the kernel that's Linux. You're really running a bunch of GNU software on top of it. So I don't disagree with his point even. I think it's okay, but he's a little bit – he's kind of pedantic about it. And so that makes it hard to put him on. Hey, I thank you for the call. Got to run. TCB, baby. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo. Yeah, that's a nice feature that Microsoft – enabled on Windows 10. Once you install Windows 10 on a machine, you could forget the serial number. No more serial numbers. They call it an entitlement. Your machine is now entitled to run Windows 10. And the way they do it is they kind of uniquely identify each machine. And they've never been, for I think good reason, they've never been completely clear about how they do this. They make some sort of summary of the hardware that the machine's on. My guess would be they look at your, for instance, your internet card, and that will have something called a MAC address that's unique to that piece of hardware. They'll probably record that. You may have a unique serial number on the machine stored in your BIOS and firmware. They may say, well, he's got such and such RAM, such and such hard drives, add that all up. And so they do some number of factors that they then say, okay, that's Leo's machine. Because, you can't just name a machine. But they also have the problem of if somebody wants to change the hard drive, does that mean they're no longer entitled? Well, no. And it has been my experience that, and Microsoft, I think, understands this, people do change the hard drives a lot on machines. That does not take away the entitlement. If you change the network card, motherboard, and hard drive, you probably would then lose the entitlement to install Windows 10. Microsoft would at that point say, that's not really the same machine. Especially nowadays, because people don't usually do that. In the past, you've been able to call them and say, hey, look, it is the same machine, but my motherboard failed. I had to replace it and get a dispensation. So this system works pretty well. Any anti-piracy system, though, has its flaws, because ultimately anti-piracy systems harm us, normal users, and not pirates. Pirates can figure out ways to get around it. It's only the casual pirate that anti-piracy systems work against. If you're a serious pirate, if you're the kind of person who's causing economic harm to Microsoft by stealing Windows, you can eliminate all of that fuss. It happens, and Microsoft really isn't going to be able to stop you using their authentication system. So this is the problem I have with these. The other problem is a couple of weeks ago, their authenticating server failed. And you may remember last week somebody called and said, all of a sudden, I bought Windows 10 Pro for this machine. All of a sudden, Microsoft's saying I have pirated software. It's not pirated. And I said, well, just be patient because this is a problem. Microsoft's authentication server failed. And they did fix it fairly quickly. But any system that makes honest users look or feel dishonest without actually stopping piracy seems to me a bad idea. And I've been inveighing against copy protection for years. And while Microsoft's authentication system is about as transparent and simple as possible, you don't even have to enter a serial number anymore. It just knows. It's still a problem. False positives are still a problem. And I just think it's bad customer relations to make your customer to say, hey, customer, you're stealing this software when they paid hundreds of dollars for it. That's just not right. Can Microsoft stop doing it? I think they could. I'm sure they've done studies and they said, well, we'd lose $100 million a year in license fees or whatever. What they can't figure out is how much more they would lose. Is how much are they losing to casual pirates? Your friend next door says, here, have a copy of my Windows. That might be a significant loss for Microsoft. Apple doesn't do it. Apple has no copy protection. But it's easier for them because you really can't or shouldn't, and it's hard to run their operating system without buying a Mac. So they're getting their money. They make hardware. That's how they make their money, not the operating system. Android's not copy protected, but again, you know, the money's made in the hardware, not in the software. It's kind of annoying. I find it annoying, and I find it really annoying that because it doesn't actually stop the criminal pirate. It just stops casual piracy. Maybe that's a big problem for Windows. In any event, we have to live with it. Now we go back to the phones. Bernie, Southeast Washington. Hello, Bernie.
Hello, Leo. Nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you. What can I do for you?
Hey, I'm stuck in a dilemma of... I want to hear your opinion about either continue listening to my either movies and audio through optical, or I have to do the transition to a HDMI cable with my... I have to buy a new receiver.
It's so identical.
If that happens.
It's identical.
I want to hear...
Doesn't matter.
It's identical.
It's identical.
Don't matter.
So what happens with HDMI is they bundle the video... It's digital, right? They bundle the video bits and the audio bits, and they send them down one cable. Optical, you ignore. You're still getting the audio bits on the HDMI connector. You need that for video, but you just ignore them. You throw them away, and you use the optical. It's the same bits.
Okay.
Same bits coming through the same channel.
Mm-hmm.
Or different channels.
I don't miss anything with Atmos if I the new.
No.
If I got the new.
No.
DVD.
As long as your receiver will decode Atmos, that you know your DVD player will send Atmos, your receiver will decode Atmos. It doesn't matter how you're getting to the receiver. Optical and HDMI are both the same bit structure. Now you want to make sure, and I don't see any reason why this wouldn't be, but you might want to make sure that you can get the Dolby encoded bits on both channels,
right.
But I think you can. I don't see any reason why you wouldn't. So, yeah, it's just the reason they do optical is mostly for convenience, because sound bars and other audio only devices, you don't often don't take HDMI. They don't need video; they just need audio. So they can. So it's a way of separating audio and video. But the HDMI has everything.
Mm-hmm. I even got my Roku 4 has an optical output. And I'd rather to hear that through my stereo, my
7.1. And that's kind of why they do it, because not all stereos, certainly very few soundbars, will take HDMI. They want optical. So they make that available to you. But it isn't like the quality is any different. It's exactly the same.
You are the shaman of the technology, man. That's what I like to hear.
All right, Bernie.
Thank you so much, Leo.
Great to talk to you. Have a good one.
Talk to you. Bye-bye.
Now we go to Jim in Calabasas, California. Hello, Jim. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Good morning, Leo. I enjoy your program a whole lot, and
thank
I'm sure
you.
A lot of other people do.
Thank you.
Thank you for having it.
My pleasure.
I have a question on replacing spinning hard drives. I've got an HP Tower computer that I've used for several years, and I'm thinking, well, maybe I should replace the hard drive now before it goes south on me. And I bought a Western Digital hard drive. And the instructions look kind of easy, but you can download the software.
Yeah. Western Digital and all the manufacturers offer copying software that will just bit by bit copy everything that's on the old drive onto the new drive. So it'll boot. It'll be perform exactly the same way.
But is there a website that would explain more in detail how to do it, like set up the partitions and so forth? I'm not familiar with all of that.
I wouldn't worry too much about that. I used to recommend, you know, you have a C partition for Windows and your apps, and then you have a D partition for your data. That makes it a little bit easier to reinstall Windows, but it's not enough of an improvement. The problem people run into is not giving enough room for one or the other, and then they have to resize. Make one big C partition, put everything in it. You're golden. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I would look at, if you're going to replace a hard drive, the one thing you might consider, and you said it's a Tower, right?
Yeah, HP with an i7 Intel in it.
Yeah. The one thing you might consider is, instead of just the Western Digital, getting an SSD as well, and it can be a little smaller, and putting Windows in the... This is one case where you C and D maybe would be well separated. Put the C drive would be the SSD, so Windows and the programs go on there. And that's because the SSD is so much faster at reading.
Yeah, I didn't know you could put both in the same computer.
Well, towers often allow you to put more than one drive in there, so you have to open it up and see if there's room. You'll need two bays, but you'll also need two connectors. You'll have a SATA cable coming off of that thing, And it, sometimes there's one drive per cable. Mostly there is. So you'll have multiple SATA connectors on the motherboard. So it's going to take a little either reading the documentation or just some physical inspection, opening it up and looking at the motherboard. But you'll see those SATA connectors. If there's a couple of them, one of them will be unoccupied. You get a SATA cable, you can have a second drive in there as long as there's room to put it in there. That's very common. That's why you get a tower, is so that you can have multiple drives in there, lots of room.
Yeah. And what are partitions?
Partitions are logical ways to divide a single physical drive into what looks like multiple drives to the operating system. So you can have one drive that's C, D, E, F, G, like that.
Am I making an image or a of the original?
I think the way the Western Digital software works, and they may have changed this, is it's a sector by sector copy. So you'll need both drives connected to the machine, mm-hmm. and you'll run the software on your original boot drive, and it will go sector by sector through the original drive and put those sectors one by one on the new drive. So it is not an image. It's just a perfect copy of the original drive on the second drive.
An image is ghost.
No, ghost is an image. Ghost is taking the contents of the drive and putting it in a single file. So that's a ghost image, or it's just a drive image, and that's good for a kind of backup. It's not your only backup, but it's good for saying, I want to keep a copy of this perfect, pristine, beautiful setup, so that if anything goes wrong, like I get a virus, I can just, instead of having to reinstall everything, blast it all on in one move.
Okay, so that's done on a separate type hard drive?
Usually, for instance, if you do this two-drive method, if you get an SSD and a spinning drive, you will image the SSD onto the second drive. So you'll have a file on the second drive that has all the data from the first drive on it. And you can also do this if you only have one drive on a USB drive. You can image out the internal drive onto a USB drive. Those are not backups, though, because remember, anything you do after you make the image is not backed up. It's just preserving. It's like putting a fly in amber. It's just preserving that exact setup the way that it was when you imaged it, for later use if you wanted to restore it. So it's mostly good for when you first set up a Windows machine. You got it all. I usually make a couple images. I make an image of just the base install, and then I go in, I tweak everything, I put all the programs I know I'm going to want on there, and make, you know, that you love that feeling, that first week where you got just a perfect computer. You make a copy of that, and then if anything goes wrong, you can at least get right back to that point with a single command, you know, you just restore that.
Uh-huh.
So I think that's handy. You're still going to need to back up as you go, back up documents and stuff.
Yeah. Okay, I like that analogy.
Fly in amber. Because that's what it is. It's unchanging, right? It's not going to ever change.
Okay. Very good. Well, I sure appreciate your help with that.
Good. Thanks. My pleasure. Much. Yeah, enjoy your new computer, because it will be like a new computer if you put an SSD in there.
I hope so.
Oh, with an i7, it'll fly. It'll be great.
Okay. Thank you once again, sir.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
The Tech Guy Podcast brought to you today by PryLock Security. We did this the other day, and I love it at the office. PryLock answers a really big issue in security. You know, you hear me talk about, I just talked about, you know, how to secure your computer and all that stuff. But honestly, in your business, the weakest link is your employees. And the reason is they're nice people. And they trust, and they, you know, especially customer service reps, they believe in serving the customer. The problem is a bad guy can easily pose as anybody he or she wants, not just a customer. They can pose as you, the boss. And I think your employees, when they get an email from the boss that says, I need this spreadsheet updated urgently, please open it up, do it, and send it back to me. They're going to, oh, yes, boss. They're going to click that link. They're going to open that spreadsheet. It may not be a spreadsheet. It might be malware. And if they're doing it at office, it might infect your whole network. You could be down with ransomware in 5 minutes. And that's why you've got to train your employees to be cynics. Well, at least to be wise to the ways of hackers. PryLock Security has the best way to do it. Protect your company against phishing emails. Of course, that's 91% of all successful hacks. Corporate hacks start with phishing email. That's how Sony got burned. Equifax, and that's really common. But there's other tricks, things like candy drops, where the employee finds a USB key out in the drive, the parking lot of the company. Oh, look, a 64 gig USB drive. Somebody dropped it. Oh, great, taking that and putting that in my computer. No. So here's what happens when you sign up for PryLock. First of all, it's really easy. They have one click setup. You can get a full year's training for 50 people or 5,000, doesn't matter. It's just less than a minute. You don't need an IT professional. It's very affordable because they have a very sophisticated technology, which saves them a lot of money. They pass it along to you 70% less than comparable programs. I'm talking a one-year security program for companies with as small as 25 employees for $395. So you can really afford this, and you can't afford not to do this. Here's what happens. First, they send phishing mails out. You get a three-day baseline phishing test. So to see, how savvy are my employees? Who clicks on links? Then you get the training. I did the training. I loved it. It's a security awareness training taught by a hacker. You learn how hackers think. You even create your own phishing emails. If you have compliance mandates, you'll be glad to know there's a 10-question final assessment you can use to say, we satisfied the mandate. And then after they take the test, it schedules and runs 24 additional at a random time phishing tests on each employee. If they click a link, download something, enter company details, passwords, or whatever, they get automatically routed to specific refresher videos so that they, hey, this was not a real phishing email. Had it been, you've just compromised the company. Watch this video to understand once again why you got to be careful. And, of course, as an admin, you get reports and analytics 24/7. If you want to do more, if you're not experienced IT pro, you can use advanced setup to give you lots of control over how it works. They even have phishing emails you can choose from and so forth, so you can really customize the heck out of it. It teaches you how hackers think, their psychology, not a simple rule list. And that's important, because no list of do's and don'ts can cover all situations. This teaches them how to think. There's even, by the way, a send a friend a fish, which allows users to send a friend or a colleague phishing email. So they like that. It's a great way to kind of get them involved in it. And they have individual gift cards, too, if you've got a family member that falls for phishing emails or other scams a lot. Here it is, PryLock.com/twit, PryLock, PryLock.com/twit. 30% off if you use the promo code Leo. PryLock.com/twit. Don't forget the promo code Leo. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. It's time to talk computers and the internet and home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz, anything with a chip in it. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can use Skype or something like that and call me. In about 20 minutes, Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, will be stopping by to talk about getting better pictures with your phone. I have to say, the camera phones now are so good that I wonder if the market for point-and-shoots is just dead, The smartphone is slowly killing a bunch of products. It killed GPS, standalone GPS devices, right? You've already got one in your phone. You don't need to buy one for your car. Killed the iPod to some degree, right? Because you don't need an iPod. You've got all the music you want on your phone. It eliminated the market for, I don't know what, compasses? Maybe not. Although most phones do have compasses built in. Pedometers, there's still a smartwatch market. But I think the next thing that maybe will be going away, thanks to the smartphone, is the point-and-shoot camera. I've been playing with a new feature. It's interesting. Google put out their Pixel 3 phone, a month and a half ago? Something like that. But they didn't include all the features. They did this last time, too. They turned on some additional features. For instance, the camera, and if you have a Pixel 3 phone, you might want to check it out. The camera now has what they call night sight. They've added a new feature to it. And you probably, if you're paying attention to this stuff, seen articles about it. It's really a remarkable technology. So the phone can do much like the iPhone. It has a portrait mode. It does, I think, a very good panorama, has the standard camera, has video. But then it also will do things like slow motion. It has a Google lens which can recognize things it's taken pictures of, photosphere, photo booth, playground, which could put augmented reality figures like Iron Man on your shoulder. But this night sight is really interesting. So the way night sight works, it's for, as the name would imply, taking pictures in the dark, low light. And the way it works is it takes a bunch of images, 15 or more images, at a variety of different shutter speeds. So that means it can do a very slow shutter speed and let more light in. The problem with really slow shutter speeds is, you know, things, if they're moving, will be blurry. So then it also does some high shutter speeds, and then it merges all the images together. And it's able to, by doing that, basically work in practically no light. It even eliminates the grain in some kind of sophisticated ways. It's a very neat technology. And it's, you know, there are a couple of things that camera phones just don't do as well as standalone cameras. One is you can't interchange lenses. You can't zoom very well. And Google's solving that too, as is Apple. Apple's doing it with multiple lenses. Apple and other companies are doing it with multiple lenses. I've seen even there's cameras with 4 and 5 lenses on them. That's one way to do it. The way Google's doing it is all in the processor. So they're taking an image and they're doing multiple images so that you can blow it up and get, and still get, you know, it doesn't get all blurry and blocky. You blow it up and it actually looks pretty good. And then the other thing a camera will do better than a camera phone in general is low light, because it's got a bigger sensor and it's got lenses with bigger openings that can gather more light. Camera phone, you know, is kind of limited in that regard. These are kind of small, cheap sensors and they can't be very wide open. So it's really interesting to see this category, and I'm sure we'll hear more about it. This category is called computational photography, not relying solely on what the physical lens and sensors can do, but taking the data from the physical lens and sensor, processing it, maybe taking multiple pictures and processing it in such a way that you get a better image. And it's remarkable what Apple and Google are doing. Google, I think, a little bit ahead of Apple at this point. Apple's kind of playing catch-up. So, and then this night sight, I would bet you, will be in Apple's iPhone next year. But for now, it's really quite remarkable. You can, there are a number of places you can see image galleries of night sight shots. I've done a couple. We had Christmas lights put up on the house, and I went out and took a picture of those last night. And I was really impressed by the quality of the image. I put it up on my blog if you want to see it, leolaporte.com. The thing that's interesting and the challenge in some ways for this, and Google does address this, is that when you're doing most cameras aren't too smart. And when they adjust the exposure of an image, they'll adjust it based on lighting values throughout the image. And often at night, for instance, taking a picture of Christmas lights, there is some very bright stuff and some very dark stuff. And the camera will almost always expose so the very bright stuff isn't too bright, which often makes the other stuff too dark. And let's say you've got a situation where you're taking a picture of a friend, a person, and there's some bright lights around. The camera might have a very dark picture of the face because it's exposing for those lights. Google says, we're trying to use artificial intelligence to understand the picture better, to understand what the picture is of. And if it's a person's face, and we'll see it as if we see faces, we'll know, hey, you're not taking a picture of a light. You're taking a picture of the face. So, you know, let's brighten up the face. Even if the light gets too bright, let's brighten up the face. That has mixed results. Because, of course, it's a computer. It's not perfectly intelligent, but some pretty impressive results nonetheless. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Jude in Indiana. Hello, Jude.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm pretty darn good, too. I got to tell you, I love your voice. I just find it so soothing and personable. Your personality is just wonderful.
Oh, you're so kind. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean that.
I know a lot of people go to sleep listening, so that's good.
No. Well, I'm
not while you're driving, but...
Yeah, I'm a truck driver, so I enjoy that. Your voice is... It kind of balances me. I want to listen, you know?
Yeah, it's relaxing without being soporific. How about that?
Yeah. I'm too distracted when I'm listening to you.
Good.
I know if I've said something important, I can go to your website and speak.
That's right. Now you're getting the point of techguylabs.com, so you can pay attention to what you're doing. Yeah.
So listen, I just last night decided I needed to replace my tablet. I had a Samsung tablet, and the charging port, you know how they stop functioning, they short out. Whatever. So
yeah,
there goes my tablet, and I was in a 2-year contract with Verizon. So of course, I have 17 months left on it,
and
I had to buy it out because it was cheaper, $175 versus.
Yeah, this is why I do not buy. I know you want LTE, but even then, don't get it from your carrier. Get the tablet and get an Apple. To be honest with you,
I did. That's why I'm calling, because good. I bought the Apple. They have their free Black Friday sale, so I paid like $300 instead of $500 for their 9-inch.
Very nice.
So they bundled the glass because I have the iPhone finally. So now I have three Apple products, and I'm happy that I finally.
I know that the iPad is overpriced, although the low-cost one's not so bad. But, boy, it is definitely the only tablet I would recommend. Unless you're buying, like, a 2-in-1 computer that's a tablet laptop with Windows on it or something like that. That's different.
Yeah.
But if you want a tablet interface, the Android tablets just don't make it. There's nothing good enough. Hey, can I put you on hold for a little bit? I know you're driving. Pay attention to your... Because we got to take a little break, but when we come back, I'd like to help you with your new iPad, because I don't think you're alone. I think a lot of people have recently purchased iPads. So we'll take a little time out, come back in a minute, and continue talking to Jude. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think you're driving right now, right, Jude?
Yes, I am. I'm in Indiana.
Nice. Big rig?
Yes, sir. Tanker.
You're driving a tanker?
Tanker, yeah. Food grade tanker.
Wow. Is there milk in there or what?
Well, I haul for a company out of Florida, and we haul a couple of things. One, sugar. Sugar is the bulk of it, which is...
Is it liquid? Is it liquid sugar?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes, yes.
Huh.
They have the bulk section, the dry bulk section. So I'm hauling today just corn syrup sugar, and it's an empty tank. I'm taking it back to get a bath, and then tomorrow I'll be hauling. I'll be learning to do the dry bulk side.
Nice.
So, yeah, it's interesting.
Is it a different kind of trailer for the dry stuff?
Yes. Yeah.
It's so not a round trailer.
It has hoppers.
Hoppers. Yeah, like, oh, okay.
Three, four, or five. Hoppers, so you know, you bottom dump type thing. So,
oh, interesting. Do you drive under like a silo to dump it in, and then they bottom dump it out, or how do they load it?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. You know, the silos, some are above ground, some are below ground. Some of the silos have their own blower attached to it. We have blowers on the truck.
Oh, interesting. So they just put a hose in there and they blow it in.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's interesting. Very loud. The dry bulk is very, very loud. You better watch the pressures on all the tanks and stuff. And I'm learning.
So that's why you need training. It's not different. Your driving's the same, but you have to pay attention to some stuff, some conditions in the tank or the hoppers.
Yes, I see. When you're unloading at the customers, you're out of the truck. And you're just making sure that you're monitoring all the pressures.
Interesting.
Yes.
And is the balance different? Does that change how you drive?
Oh, absolutely. The dry bulk is not too much different than hauling a dry van, but the liquid tankers, oh my Lord, this load I just unloaded is the roughest stuff. It's like you creep an up or an on ramp or up a hill, and I'm in an automatic. And when it shifts gears, that step, the surge comes and smacks you, just like you got rear ended.
I never thought of that, but that makes perfect sense. You sloshes forward, and you've got all this mass pushing you forward now.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
I never thought of that.
It's alive. It's wow. alive.
It's alive. The tank is alive.
It is. It truly has a mind of its own. And automatics, you can't adjust for the surge. Because after a while, you kind of learn your load and how it behaves. And, you know, when you drive, you just learn those nuances. But in an automatic, the transmission shifts when the transmission shifts, you know?
Wow. How interesting.
Yeah, you can kind of time it so that it might not hit as hard.
You know, and what do you want to tell us drivers in little vehicles swarming around you that we should be paying attention to? Because I bet you have some things.
Stay back. Do not get up right on.
This is...
You don't know that we're carrying, you know, if we have a permit load, we can carry, we're usually loaded with 80,000 pounds or pretty close to it. But sometimes it's over that. And these guys in the bad weather, they want to cut off. They get annoyed. We're too slow for them. And they come up around the front of us and then slow down. You know what I mean? And, you know, you see it every day. You know what I mean? It's so dangerous.
Oh, I see. I you know, even in a regular vehicle, people just tailgate like crazy and they swoop in and out of lanes. And it makes me nuts. And I just know you do that in front of a truck. I always try to give you guys a lot of, hey, we're coming back. Hold on. Leo Laporte. The tech guy. I'm actually having a great conversation off the air with Jude. She's driving a load back to headquarters in Florida from Indiana. It's an empty truck, so you're going to bring it back to get washed and loaded up again. But we're talking about how people drive around big rigs. And I said, what is the message, Jude, that you would like to pass all of us car drivers?
Be patient and stay back. You know,
it's not easy to, you know, you got a lot of momentum in those trucks, and the worst thing you can do is cut one off, of course. But
yeah, it's dangerous.
Yeah, give them some respect. And you know what? I don't know if this is a good thing or not, but when a truck wants to change lanes and I'm behind it, I always give it some room, and then I flash my lights to let the trucker know you're clear.
That's wonderful etiquette. Yeah, that's such a treat to get that acknowledgement that shows that you're educated to truck drivers' needs, you know, and we appreciate that.
Good.
You got to be careful, though. When you do that, some places actually tell you don't flash your lights, because if someone is coming up 80 miles an hour and decides to weave in between and cause an accident, there's a liability in there.
That's a good point. That makes sense, yeah. Because unless you're really sure the road is clear behind you, no jerk is going to take advantage of those two lengths.
Right.
Okay. Right. Yeah, I hate that, too. Because I really believe in leaving stopping room, so I always make sure there's enough car lengths between me and the car ahead. I'm not a tailgater by any means. And of course, all that means is somebody else is going to say, oh, good, there's room. Let me get in there.
And that's true.
I hate that. I'm not leaving room for you. It's all right. I just slow down a little more, and then somebody else jumps in. So, Jude, you called about your new iPad. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What could I do to make it easier for you?
Well, okay. So, you know, as a professional driver, I have to be careful, because I'm not, you know, you're only allowed to touch one button on the phone. It's hands-free with one execution.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. Here in California, we're not allowed to touch it at all.
Right. Well, that's why you have your hands free, and if you're going to touch it, you can only execute one touch.
I see. So it's mounted on a mount, and so it is part of the dashboard in effect, but I still can't, like, start fiddling with it. I can only tap it.
Right, and it's problematic because, you know, at what point, how many phones...
No phone works with one touch. I could tell you that right now.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? So you have headphones, and so Siri and Alexa, you know, executing commands while you're driving is very helpful.
Absolutely.
And problematic.
Yeah.
So what prompted me to call you today was brand new experience. I'm talking to my Siri on my iPhone, and I have my tablet, which is playing what? Leo Laborde.
Yay! Yay!
And so when I wanted to call you, I said, hey, Siri, you know, KFI, Leo Laborde, the tech guy.
Nice.
And both of them answered me.
Yeah.
And I went, uh-oh. Now what do I do? How do I stop them from both responding to that request without turning one off? And I wondered if, you know, and I'm really sorry that Apple doesn't sponsor you because... you know.
Oh, they hate me. You know why? Because I'm not tame enough for them. They know I like Apple stuff, and I talk about it. I have the most listened to Apple podcasts, two of them, but and then a fairly large audience on the weekends with the radio show. So I would think I'd be fairly important to them, but they don't. They can't. They like journalists where they can say, "Hey, don't say anything bad, okay?" And sometimes, I like to call it as I see it. Sometimes it's not good. So let me tell you how Apple does this Siri stuff. In theory, the device that is nearest to you is supposed to respond, and the other one's supposed to back off. And the way that they do it, and I bet you this is why it's not working for you, is through Bluetooth. So both devices need to have Bluetooth turned on. When you say, hey, you know who, and I'm reading now from Apple's own page on this, how Siri works with multiple devices. When you say, hey, you know who, near multiple devices, the devices use Bluetooth to quickly communicate with each other and determine who should respond. The device that responds, in theory, is the one that heard you best. Now, here's the irony. I'm sitting, this happened to me last night. I've got an iPhone, an Apple Watch, an iPad, and a HomePod all in the same room. So when I say, hey, you know who, I got a bunch of devices going, what, huh? But because they're all got Bluetooth, they do the right thing. Only one responds. Weirdly, though, it's the HomePod, which is 30 feet behind me. And it distantly goes, yes, Leo, what do you want? I'm talking. Yeah, my phone's right in my hand. Can I just... All I want to know is how old Michael Douglas is. And now I have to listen carefully to the HomePod across the room. But that's just... I know. It's not perfect. But make sure Bluetooth is turned on. So, because if it's not, that's when you'll have two devices responding. They don't know the other device is there. Of course, you have to be on the same version of the operating system, iOS 12. I'm sure you are. Let's see. Yeah. If you have a phone or iPad and you don't want it to respond to, hey, Siri, here's a good little trick. Put it face down.
Oh.
Sorry. I can't like that music for you.
Yeah. Thank you, Siri. I wasn't talking to you. Yeah, I just set off 300,000 Apple phones, all of them saying, what? So I'm sorry. Pay attention to driving, Jude. You shouldn't be laughing. If you put it face down, it'll stop listening. Let's try it. Let me put it face down. Hey, Siri. Nothing. So that's the trick. If you have a Mac that supports Hey Siri, it gets even worse because my Mac also does. And close the lid, it won't respond. So,
wow.
Yeah. If you have a HomePod, you can say, get this, and I have to do this, hey, you know who, turn off hey, you know who. And then the HomePod will stop listening for a bit. And if you want to turn it back on, you touch and hold the top of it and say, turn on hey, you know who.
I was hoping you were going to tell me that I could do... an S1 and an S2.
Wouldn't that be nice to give them individual names? And this is my single number one complaint with all of these devices is you can't give them unique names.
That's too bad.
Yeah, and that's going to come. We had it at once, the Moto X, way back when with Android and Google Assistant, you could say whatever phrase you wanted. And so my phone, I said, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're my only hope. And that way... Which was good because that didn't usually come up in conversation that way. The longer the phrase, the more likely it's not going to accidentally hear it. And that's one of the problems with Hey Siri. It's too short. And I think, honestly, it gets triggered by my TV at least three times a night. If somebody says sincerely, it triggers it. It just gets triggered all the time.
Right. Well, like I said, since I'm driving and I'm like, pausing because I'm trying to listen to what the other one is saying. and I'm
put
like,
it no, put it face down. You could still listen to your, you know, the tech guy and all that. Put it face down. It won't respond.
Okay, well, I have to do that without being in violation too.
Well, and then the other thing is, and this is in theory, I actually haven't tested this, but Apple says Bluetooth must be turned on all those devices. That way, they can say, "Oh, I see a phone nearby," and they can negotiate who will answer. Jude, a pleasure talking to you. Safe driving, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, what a treat talking to you. Thank you, Jude. Safe travels.
Thank you. Have a good day.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. Now, yeah, I want to be able to say, hey, Jude, to my phone. That would be good. Hey, Jude. Hey, Chris. It's Mr.
Hello.
Marquardt. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm well. Are we doing a review today or no?
No, we're going to skip this for one more week, because good. I would like to talk about Flickr.
Yay!
Because we've been using it for so long. There's a long history, and I'm getting lots of questions good. Because they're changing the business model.
And
so.
I interviewed Chris McCaskill a couple months
ago.
Oh,
you did?
Yeah. So I can talk about that, too. I've known Chris for
that is cool.
a decade. So, yeah, good. That's a great topic.
Very good.
Good.
Very
All right,
good.
Talk to you in a minute.
All right.
And yes, I did. We started watching The Kominsky Method last night, and I do like it. It's quite good. That's why I wanted to know how old Michael Douglas was. You figured it out, didn't you? So I asked how old. So I said, hey, Shlomo, how old is Alan Arkin? He's 85. And I said, oh, really, huh? He looks good for 85. I said, how old is Michael Douglas? He's 75. I said, ooh. Because maybe it's also the grizzled look that Michael Douglas is affecting on the show, but he really looks a lot older than Alan Arkin. And Alan Arkin seems a lot more nimble. I want to be like Alan Arkin when I'm 85. I'd be happy. That would make me happy. I don't know what the trick is on that. Not be married to Catherine Zeta-Jones, probably. She'd wear you out. So I'm not drinking coffee. Somebody's saying, oh, coffee makes me nervous. I decided to drink this mud that they gave us. Somebody sent me this. And if you're the guy from Mud, thank you. Mud Water, MUDWTR.com. It is a tea, kind of. Looks like cocoa. It's powdered. And you put a tablespoon in a cup of boiling water, and you let it sit for 2 minutes, and then you stir it, and you drink it, which is what I'm doing. It tastes like chai. It's quite good. And it's got in it a lot of weird stuff. So there is, in fact, masala chai in it, cacao, reishi, chaga, cordyceps, lion's mane, turmeric, sea salt, and cinnamon. It tastes pretty good. Somebody says it looks like Mexican brown. I don't know what Mexican brown looks like. But I probably wouldn't try to take this across the border. It smells like cinnamon. It's actually quite good. And it's energetic without being. So I think I'm going to get some more of this. I like this. So if you sent it to me, they just sent it to me. You know, I did something really dumb. I got it in an unmarked box. It had this and some stickers and stuff, and I opened it and drank it. I even gave it to some visitors, which was probably really dumb, but fortunately, it wasn't poison. So, I think lion's mane. I think some of this is mushrooms. Should probably look up all the things. What is reishi? It's a mushroom. Okay. The Lingzi mushroom is a polypore mushroom belonging to the genus Ganoderma. It lacks gills. Okay. So I think you do mushrooms for immune, right? And then it's got chaga, which is also a mushroom.
I think these are all mushrooms.
Chris Marquardt, discoverthetopfloor.com. He's a professional photographer, author of many books, including that new wide-angle book. I can't wait to read that. a book on film photography, and we were talking about computational photography at the beginning of the hour. He does a podcast called The Future of Photography. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Dio. Yeah, we talk a lot about computational photography on that podcast.
It's amazing. Have you tried the night? I was just talking about the night sight on the Pixel 3. It's remarkable.
No, I haven't. But I hear interesting things about it. I mean, it's just wild.
What it's doing is highly computational, but it does a really good job. But that's not what you're here to talk about today, actually.
No, I want to talk about one thing that has come up lately, and it's the Flickr situation.
The Flickr. So this is relevant to us because we use Flickr for your photo assignments. We share photos on Flickr.
We have a long history with Flickr. We've been using it for 11 years, over 11 years. I looked it up. We started using Flickr. We opened the Tech Guy channel on the 26th of May 2007.
Is that true? That's amazing.
We've been doing weekly assignments, monthly assignments, and the channel now has 13,000 members. Just the Tech Guy channel, 13,000 members and 6,000 photos uploaded.
Isn't that awesome? But that I've been using, and I know you have too, Flickr to share my photos with people for years.
Right.
I love Flickr.
And now, Flickr has an interesting history, right? It's been its own thing, founded by people who love photography, and then it was sold to Yahoo. And Yahoo kept it pretty much running as is. And then they sold it to Verizon, and then Verizon incorporated it into their media division. Oath, I think, was the name.
Yeah.
And along the way, they changed a few things because Flickr used to be this great photo community. And then I think it was Verizon who introduced a free terabyte of storage for every user.
No, I think Yahoo did it back when it was Yahoo.
Did Yahoo really start that? Okay.
Yeah, they were really trying to save it, I think. But that is a crazy thing to do because that's basically unlimited photo storage free.
A terabyte for your photos. Yeah. And of course, I mean, people started using it for backing up their photos, for just dumping everything they had in terms of photos on their full resolution as well. So there's no limitation there.
And I mean, when they did that, I told people about it, but I continued to pay for Pro just because I wanted Flickr to stick around. And I knew that was a suicidal decision.
Giving away a terabyte for free per user, that's not sustainable.
No.
This is impossible to sustain.
It was a last-ditch effort by Yahoo to save it. And then they sold to Verizon, and it didn't matter anymore.
Yeah. And then Verizon, I mean, they kept that 1 terabyte going. And what happened is that people started using it as a backup. They dumped all their photos on there. And then when you searched Flickr for something, I mean, they automatically index things. They do the computational thing. They recognize what's in the photos. So you all of a sudden you find 100 almost identical pictures of the same thing. The quality went pretty south, and the quantity went up dramatically. So that, for me personally, that was not much fun. So Flickr, I used it, I paid for it, but yeah, it wasn't that much fun. And now Flickr has introduced a change in their business model. And they are going to limit the free tier to, not 1 terabyte, but 1,000 photos.
Which is a lot.
Which sounds scary, especially if you had all your photos backed up there. And I don't know what an average photo library is in the amount of photos, but I, as a pro, I have like 100,000 photos in my library. So that would be difficult for me. But then I looked at my usage of Flickr, and I have 1,500 photos on Flickr. That's all I have up there.
So that's a lifetime of uploading photos, practically.
And it comes from the fact that I'll always emphasize the quality over the quantity. I do heavy editing on my photos. I do this workflow where I cut down my photos to just a handful of really good ones, and the rest doesn't go on Flickr because I want just the best stuff up there. And that's why there is only, in quotes, 1,500 photos up there that I put up there. But Well, they have now introduced Flickr Pro, where they had Flickr Pro, but now if you want more than 1,000 photos up there, I think they'll start sometime early next year. They are going to start to
How many photos can you store in Flickr Pro? Do they say?
It's unlimited.
Okay.
There's no limit.
Not even Flickr a terabyte. You put as much
Flickr
as you
Flickr Pro, $50 a year. Okay, so that's the price.
And they're discounting it right now, by the way.
They're discounting it. If you are a Flickr free member, you get like 30% off. They give you unlimited storage, the full resolution images. Again, I don't think anyone else, any unpaid solution does that.
It's just fantastic.
Google limits you to 16 megapixels.
And we should mention, one of the things that reasons this has changed is Verizon sold it. They sold it to a company that you and I know very well, SmugMug. I've been using SmugMug as long as I've been using Flickr as my website, basically. If you go to www.leo.camera, that's my photo site. That's SmugMug. But I've always had Flickr because the difference is Flickr is about sharing photos with other people. It's about the social network, about getting feedback and response from people. It's more than just a website for you. It's a social site, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what I see it like. And so I personally think those changes are good. I think they are going to help bring the quality back. I'm totally aware that some people don't like that because they use it as a backup service.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's what it should be, at least not for free.
Use Amazon Prime or Google. There's plenty of places you can dump your photos if you want to do that.
Right.
I put my best stuff on Flickr.
There's some perks there. I mean, they gave you some partner discounts. I think you get Adobe CC at 50% off.
Oh.
15% off. You get SmugMug for 50% off for the first year. There's some gear discounts in there. So if you use any of these things, if you're a SmugMug user, if you use Adobe Creative Cloud, you'll make back some of those $50. So I think it's a good thing, and it won't influence what we do here on the Tech Guy.
No, in fact, it's a relief because I was a little nervous with Verizon in charge.
I think this is going to be a new lease of life. Mm-hmm. For Flickr is going to help keep it alive.
And so somebody's saying, why not use just SmugMug? Because I pay $140 a year for SmugMug. It's $30 a year right now for Flickr Pro. They're just different things. SmugMug is your photo website, and you can use it to sell products. There's commenting, but that's not a big part of it. So Flickr is really all about the comments, about the sharing. It's about things like the Tech Guy group where we do photo assignments and people post their pictures and talk. It's really a gathering place for photographers in there.
Exactly.
Pictures.
And I think that's what it should be, yes.
Yeah. I love it that they're continuing their Creative Commons policies. Photos that are licensed, as all of mine are, for reuse as long as you attribute it, are going to stay up there and not be deleted. And that's a really important part because if you're looking for images you can use on a blog or so forth, if you do a Creative Commons search on Flickr, that is a very valuable resource. So that sounds like that they're going to keep.
I think they will, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Chris, I'm glad you brought this up. And by the way, if you want to take a picture of, what is it, glasses?
Glasses is still on. We still have 1 week to go with this assignment.
Upload it to Flickr. By the way, they're eliminating the Yahoo login next month or in January, which is good. Upload it to Flickr. It's a free account. Tag it glasses and put it in the Tech Guy group, and we will be reviewing next week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because it really is, I think, confusing to people. And it's going to be a hiccup for a while.
I received angry emails from people about this.
Yeah.
And I don't understand it. I mean, if this is what you used it for, then if the backup thing is what you used it for, it'll hurt you, yeah?
Yeah.
Or it'll change something. Well, but the photographers have it in their hands, so it's a photography site again, not a storage site.
Yep. Yep.
That's
yep.
good.
Yep. Yep. And I, I don't use Instagram anymore. So that
You don't?
No. I don't want to.
Is it because it's Facebook related?
Yes, I don't want to participate in the Facebook ecosystem in any way, shape, or form. Plus, to be honest, every ninth picture was an ad. That really detracted from the experience for me.
Changing now, yeah.
Yeah. I just loathe Facebook, and I don't want, and already they're ruining Instagram, and the stories to me ruined it. I want a photo site. And so Flickr to me is going to be my Instagram. In fact, if you go to my blog, I have a sidebar with not Instagram pictures anymore, but Flickr pictures. And so I'm going to, my confusion a little bit is what I put on Flickr versus what I put on SmugMug. And what I've been doing is making Flickr a little less restrictive. I put more photos on Flickr. SmugMug, I want it to be just the, you know, the stuff I think is really the best. And then Flickr is kind of can be a little more ephemeral. It's more like, to me, like what I would put on Instagram.
Okay.
What are you going to do? How are you going to do that?
I'm still debating. I mean, I will stay pro, that's for sure. But Flickr so far has been kind of that's where I put my portfolio material.
Yeah, see, you're professional, so portfolio is meaningful to you. Yeah.
And Instagram at this point is more like my, interesting stuff I see around.
Yeah.
Funny things from my travels, that kind of stuff.
Well, it was nice to have something dopey where you could put silly stuff.
Yeah, and Flickr isn't that for me at this point. So I'm,
Well, I actually have been doing that because my blog has there's stuff. I put photos on my blog that I don't put on Flickr or SmugMug. So there's really three levels. And yeah, the Instagram dopey stuff I put on my blog.
Dopey is a good way to say that, yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm going to have to figure that one out. That's
Maybe we'll have to come up with a recommendation of some sort. I'll have to think about that.
Yeah.
So what levels would you say those are? Serious, dopey, and
so you're in your star method. You have three stars for stuff that you want to keep, but that isn't representative of your best work. But it's for family reasons or life reasons you want to keep. So that's the stuff that's going to go. The three stars go on my blog. The four stars go on Flickr. The five stars go on SmugMug. So
5 stars is your portfolio material. Yeah. 4 stars is the more serious stuff, and 3 stars is more the dopey everyday kind of stuff.
So like on my blog right now, I have a picture of Lisa making 2 pots of spaghetti sauce for Thanksgiving and the Christmas
lights. That's
not
dopey, though.
No, it's Instagram. It's the 3-star stuff. It's not artistic.
Yeah,
it's my life, and then a little more artistic on Flickr. But maybe a little bit more loose, and I don't know. I don't know if I need both Flickr and SmugMug, to be honest.
I think you and I were not the only ones fighting this. So, or debating this. So maybe maybe we need a movement on where something like that.
Talk to you next week, my friend.
All right, next week.
Stay warm. I bet it's cold in Hanover.
It is. Take care.
All right. Bye bye. Don't forget our photo assignment for Chris Marquardt glasses. Upload your picture to Flickr. Yes, we're going to stay on Flickr now. Yeah, now more than ever. And then submit it to the Tech Guy group with the tag glasses in the tag field. Renee Silverman, our moderator at the Tech Guy group on Flickr, will say thank you, and we will review next week. We can do one a week, so you have one picture. By the way, did I say glasses are spectacles or tumblers, or it could be whatever you say it is. Glasses, that's all I'm going to say. The Tech Guy Podcast is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Are you buying a home or you're refinancing? You need to know about Quicken Loans. I'm sure you do. They're the number one lender in the country. It's an interesting story because they've been number one in customer satisfaction for years. 8 years in a row, according to J.D. Power, for mortgage origination. The last 5 years for mortgage servicing. So they're really loved by their customers. And, you know, about a year ago, they became the number one lender in the country in terms of volume as well. And I think they go hand in hand, right? I mean, I hope they do. I hope it's true in business that if you take care of your customers, if you consider their experience, if you focus on serving them, that you do well in business. Boy, I hope that's true. It sure is true for Rocket Mortgage. Quicken Loans. I didn't mention Rocket Mortgage. So Quicken Loans, one of the ways they thought about customers, they said, you know, this whole process of going to a bank and getting dressed up to show them you don't really need the money. You just, you know, want to do them a favor by taking a loan and then filling out a long application. And the worst part, at least for me, was they kept coming back. We went to the Big Bag for our home about 5 years ago. They kept coming back saying, now we want this. Now we want. They piecemealed it like crazy for 2 months. Oh, we'd like your bank statements from 2010. Oh, we need pay stubs from the third job you had 4 years ago. Whatever. It was crazy. And we had to fax them over, which was, you know, even 5 years ago, it was kind of hard to find a fax machine. Especially on a boat. We were on vacation. Anyway, it's a long story. You don't need to hear that. The point being, Rocket Mortgage was created by Quicken Loans for people like me, and I'm guessing people like you, who want to do it all online. We don't want to go to the bank. We don't want to go to the attic to look for paperwork. We don't want to call old jobs and ask for pay stubs. No, we want them to do the work. So they created Rocket Mortgage and the three-step power buying process. Rocket Mortgage is an entirely online mortgage approval process. You can do the whole thing on your laptop, your desktop. You can actually do it on your phone, which means you could be at an open house and looking at the house and go, honey, nudge, nudge, let's buy this. I like it, and it's a good price. Yes, dear, but we don't have a loan. Oh, honey, don't worry. I'm going to rocketmortgage.com/techguy right now. This is a dramatization. And I'm going to apply for the loan. And you fill it's very simple. You won't need to look anything up. It's stuff you already know. Name, address, social security number, birth date, that kind of thing. Just a few questions. Because they're going to check your credit. Of course they're going to check your credit. And they just do that. And all of that takes a few minutes. I mean, around less than 10, let's say. Pretty quick. And at that point, they will tell you what loans you qualify for. You choose the term, the rate, the down payment, and boom, you get what they call pre-qualified approval. You can actually at the open house say, we got pre-qualified approval. We want to make an offer. But then, you're going to love this. The next step, that's step one. Step two, the loan officer at Quicken Loans goes and verifies your income, your assets, and your credit. And by the way, most of the time, they don't even need your intervention here. They do this all because they have relationships, trusted partnerships with all the banks and everybody. So they just say, let's check this in. And they get all the information. And within 24 hours, in most cases, they will give you something they call verified approval. Now, this is gold. This is gold. You have that. You can print a letter out if you want. There's a button on the website. And you could give that letter or show the verified approval to your realtor, but more importantly, to the sellers. When you make that offer now, you're like a cash buyer. You've got verified approval. So, I don't know if you've shopped for a house before, you know that somebody comes in with cash or they already have the loan, they go right to the front of the line. Nobody wants to sell a house to somebody who says, well, I'm going to buy the house, I'm going to make an offer, but it's contingent on me getting a loan. That is right down to the bottom of the list. You don't want to be that person. You want to be the one who says, I got the loan. See here, verified. Yeah, mm-hmm. You're as good as a cash buyer. You bet you got the money. And that's when step three happens. Once you get verified approval, this is the Rate Shield approval they just launched. This kicks in. It's exclusive to Quicken Loans. And I love this because interest rates have been going up. This hasn't been a problem for a while, but now they are. They're going up. And that's scary because as you're shopping for the house, every time the interest rate goes up, that cost of that house, even though the selling price didn't go up, the cost to you goes up a lot. A lot. One little tick in the interest rate, that's thousands of dollars. So you know that in the back of your mind, and there's pressure. It's like, we got to buy this house because it's going to go up and it's going to cost more, and let's get it now. But you may not, I don't think that's good. That's besides anxious making, you may buy a house. It's not right. This is a big purchase. You want time to think. So Rate Shield approval locks your rate. And it doesn't lock it for a week or a month. It locks it for 90 days, up to 90 days while you shop. So you have up to 3 months to find the perfect house. And so it takes away some of that anxiety. This is why they're number one, right? It just makes you breathe. If rates go up, doesn't matter. Your rate, they gave you the rate. It's locked. Actually, it's not exactly locked because if rates go down, your rate could go down. It just can't go up. So you win either way. I mean, this is really good stuff. This is why Quicken Loans is America's largest mortgage lender. To get started, it's very simple. You can do it all on your phone. As I said, rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender. That's actually important. That's good, right? Licensed in all 50 states. You can use them. no matter where you live. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. That's important, too. You can go to the web and look that up. RocketMortgage.com/TechGuy. Actually, really, that's all you need to remember. RocketMortgage.com/TechGuy. This is the way to do it. And believe me, when Lisa and I buy a new house, that's where we're going. RocketMortgage.com/TechGuy. We thank him for making the Tech Guy and the Tech Guy Lab site possible. And now on with the show. Line two, Dom, Mission Viejo, California. Hello, Dom.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Hey, Leo. So I'm thinking about putting a TV in my backyard, so I need to up my Wi-Fi.
A TV in your backyard. Is it going to be a projector, or is it going to be just a big screen that's in a sheltered area? Or
yeah, just a flat screen that I'm going to. I have a pergola in the back of my house. I was going to mount the flat screen to it, and I was going to use the internet instead of putting a cable line to it. So, you know, my Wi-Fi in the backyard isn't all that great. So I went to Costco last week, and I picked up the Google Wi-Fi, the mesh system.
Okay.
And hooked that up. And just a really simple question. This is just and the Wi-Fi works great. And I recommend it, by the way. It's really increased the speed in my house.
Mesh is a big improvement for almost everybody, yeah.
When you're testing, doing the speed test, and this is the geek part of me, it seems like every test I use, whether it's the test that comes with the Wi-Fi system itself, or whether you go to the Google, the search engine, or if you use another, it seems like the numbers are always different.
Yeah.
You never really know what the reading is, the ups and the downs.
Right.
How do you get a true reading of the speed? And again, I am getting good speed. I just would love to know what it is.
You want a number. And of course, your internet service provider gives you a number, but if you read carefully, there's a little tiny, right next to the 100 megabits is a number, a word, two words, up to, that tell you what they're giving you is the maximum possible. They're not guaranteeing that. They're not even saying you're going to get that. It just may be as fast as. So that's the first thing to understand, and that's why people do speed test. So this question has a lot of factors to it. And in fact, it's been even more complicated by your choice of Wi-Fi router, and I'll explain that at the end. The first thing is your internet service provider, especially if you're on cable, is inconsistent. This is less true on DSL if you're on a phone line. And this comes back to what that wire that's coming into your house is connected to. At whatever point it's connected to the broader internet. So if you think about your internet service provider, let's say they have a big tube that is their total internet access coming into their premises, and then they connect it to a switch which divvies it out to all the customers. You, all the customers, are dividing that big tube into little amounts. And it will fluctuate if they have so many customers that one or two or 100 customers can bring the total down. You know, if they're such bandwidth hogs that they use up more than half of the big tube, you're going to get less. It's less of a problem on DSL because in most cases, DSL is coming from the switch at the phone company and they have more bandwidth. You're not impacted by your neighborhood. You're impacted by the total usage on that central office. Cable modems, the way they work is they have a backhaul that comes down to a box that's in your neighborhood. And so that's a smaller amount than the big tube that the cable company's getting. And that smaller amount is shared by you and your neighbors. And your neighbors are usually around 100 people. So you will notice that your bandwidth goes down, for instance, especially on a cable modem. It could go up down on a DSL as well, but mostly it doesn't because telcos have big pipes and statistically it's more evenly shared because more people are connected to that main switch. With you, if you have a bandwidth hog next door or you have, let's say you have a neighbor next door with three teenagers and all three teenagers are watching YouTube and your neighbor's watching Netflix, they're drawing a lot of bandwidth, and that's why most homes in cable neighborhoods notice a drop in bandwidth around 6 o'clock at night, 6 or prime time viewing. because people are streaming. And cable companies don't really up the amount of bandwidth to that head end near you. They have a kind of a single amount that they're pumping in there. And so you're dividing it more up at night. So you will notice that fluctuation. So that's one cause of fluctuations, literally fluctuation in available bandwidth from the internet service provider. The next thing that happens, of course, is in your own home, and it's exactly the same problem, but locally, you've got one pipe coming into your home, and then if you've got three teenagers watching YouTube, good luck getting high speed because you're dividing your total amount up by those people. There's another thing that can impact the speed, and that's the speed of the device you're using. Internet, mostly these days, comes from Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi radios in your phone, laptops, other devices are not all made equal. Some are better than others. Some are faster than others. And so you may find you've got two phones in front of you, and one's Android, one's iOS, and the speeds are dramatically different. That's the hardware or the operating system. Both can have an impact on it. So a Mac laptop might get different speeds than a Windows laptop. The hardware in the Windows laptop, the Wi-Fi hardware, might be different. That is less of a problem when you're physically connected by a wire, Ethernet wire, but most people are on Wi-Fi. Now you're adding, and this is the last piece of the puzzle, mesh. And one thing that all mesh devices claim to do, some do more than others, is bandwidth shaping. So your Google Home is supposed to be, and I don't frankly know if Google does this or not. I know some do. My Eero does it, for instance. That's another mesh company. Watch what's going on. And it says, oh, you know, right now, Dom's using just getting email. So give him 3 megabits because in the other room, his wife is watching a UHD Netflix movie, she needs 25 megabits to watch that. So it's bandwidth shaping, and it literally is because it knows this is why mesh is better. One of the reasons mesh is better, it knows what devices are on there, and it's constantly shaping the bandwidth to each device to accommodate the device's needs. So when you run a speed test, it may, you know, it'll vary depending on what other people in the house are doing, not only because they're all sharing the same amount of bandwidth, but because your mesh modem may also be saying, no, I see you running speed test. I'm not going to let you buffer your wife's movie. That would be wrong. So all of this makes it very hard to get a single number. I'll tell you what I would recommend. If you want to get a sense, all you're ever going to do is get a sense, is you do the test at multiple times throughout the day. And you probably want to use different servers. So there's speedtest.net. There's an app for that. There's a website. But there are other speed tests out there. I like Broadband Reports has one that's very good. You can use that as well. And then Netflix has its own test that is actually a test of how well you connect to Netflix servers directly. That's at fast.com. So I would do speedtest.net, fast.com, and broadbandreports.com. That's three different tests, three different servers. None of them will give you the same number, and it will vary depending on time of day, but at least you'll be able to get an idea of the shape of what's going on. And that's useful. There's other factors, by the way, than just download and upload speed. There's download speed is the most important one. Upload speed is relevant, though, because one of the things that happens when you're uploading data to the internet, each packet you upload needs a packet from the download saying, I got it, next one. And it's easy to saturate your upload and make downloads impossible. So even if you're only uploading a little bit, it can actually make your downloads much, much slower. So that's another factor. And so look at downloads. You should also look at latency, which is the amount of time it takes to send a single packet to the server and back. That's important. High latency means bad voice over the internet, bad gaming. And then there's something called jitter, which is like latency that will also impact voice over the internet. All of these factors make a picture of your internet access. In other words, that number that the company's given you, you get 100 megabits down, is basically meaningless. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's a long answer to that question. I'm
No. Thank you so much.
You're very patient. Does that all make sense?
It makes total sense. Does that all go into the show notes, Leo?
James, write that all down, will you? Yeah, it should go in the show notes. I've had to give this discussion a few times, so this would be a good one for James to do his best with. And then Josh, you're listening to Josh. You could maybe make bullet points out of this, because this would be, and this could be the tip of the week, because it is complicated, right? It's very complicated.
Yes. No, that was a great informative. Could I ask one really quick question?
Yeah, of course. You got time.
So this TV that I'm hooking up, should I be able to get, I have a Roku, so should I be able to get most of what I need without having to put that, you know, the cable company said, well, put a splitter through your wall. I don't want to do any of that. I just want to do, I want to do it all through the internet.
Stuff you won't get. You might, really, it's going to depend on what you subscribe to. So okay. I'll give you as an example, HBO. If you get HBO on your cable, you already got it. And the good news is if you do subscribe to it on cable, you can usually use something called HBO Go, which is an app which you could put on your Roku. Now you got HBO over the internet. If you don't have HBO on cable but you want HBO, HBO also sells a product, this is very confusing, called HBO Now, where you pay them directly $15 a month. You got HBO on your cable. The tough one is locals, like you know, your local TV stations. Now, you're in Mission Viejo, so you have access via antenna to all the locals, so you could do that. You could aim at Mount Wilson.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. That would give you, by the way, the best possible quality. Or, I mean, you always have cable. Or you could subscribe to one of these, what they call them, over-the-top services like Sling TV. My favorite, as I mentioned, is YouTube TV. Those will almost, you know, you have to check, but almost every area you'll get locals with that. And that's another way to do it. The quality, as I mentioned, is not as good. In fact, the best quality is going to be that antenna. If you could do that, you'll end up sitting in your pergola all day.
Leo, thank you so much. That was just a great answer. It's so informative.
I'm glad you asked, Tom. That's great. Thank you. My pleasure. Take care.
Have a great day.
You too.
All righty.
It's...
You're tuned to
even more complicated
Leo Laporte
than that. It's even more complicated than that, but that's a start. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, you know, all the stuff with chips in it. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number. We do put everything that goes on in this show. We try to put all the antics up on the web at techguylabs.com. And I want to mention that because Dom, after my very long, probably over-involved explanation of why speed tests vary when you're checking your internet, he said, are you going to put that in the show notes? And we will. So that's what we put up on the website, techguylabs.com. Actually, we do a number of things. So as I speak right now, James DeRuvo's writing. And so he'll have written, you know, as best he can, because he's doing it live, an outline of that. We'll then go back and Josh from our office will then flesh it out. He probably will make that explanation a tip of the week. In fact, Josh, let's do that. So that'll be right there on the front page, easy to find. And it'll include links to the speed tests I mentioned and a kind of a description of all that stuff. But we also, after the show on the website, put the audio and video of the show. So you could go right to this page, 1542, episode 1542. And that was, what, the last call an hour two. So you can go right to that and actually listen to it, play the video if you want to see me do it. See my eyes closed as I try to navigate my way through the intricacies of internet access. And so that way you could, if you wanted to, re-listen to the answer. So that's all up at techguylabs.com. And you'd think, with all of that goodness and 1,542 shows worth, that we would be charging, you know, $100 a month to access that. But in fact, we do not charge at all. It is because I believe in the internet, the free, the open internet. I think that, you know, one of the miracles of our society, maybe the miracle of the 21st century, is this internet. Things like Wikipedia, where people generously contribute their knowledge and time to make an encyclopedia that is, let's face it, better than any print encyclopedia ever was, even more accurate. And I know people might dispute that, but there have been a number of studies that say Wikipedia is in most cases more accurate. Occasionally you'll get a page where it's a hot topic and people are fighting, but it always settles down to accurate. To the point where I even quote my Wikipedia bio as my official bio. It's not my official bio. I've written one, but it is pretty darn good. And occasionally people will sneak stuff in there and then the editors fix it. So that's an example. I just feel like the free and open internet where people are contributing knowledge is such a social good. I want to do my part. And so that website, techguylabs.com, is free and open. We don't even ask you for an email address or a sign up or anything. You just go there, techguylabs.com. It's all there for your. We've got a very good search engine. You can find anything I talked about over the last 14 years. It's going to be 15 in January. 15 years of this show. So there's tons of stuff there. Most of it out of date, I guess, but some of it not. And that's free. And actually, I should probably give credit to our advertisers because that's who pays for it. The advertisers pay for the show. They pay for my limousine rides. They pay for my first-class airfare. No. My $300 haircuts and the website. There's one place where, no, I don't get $300 haircuts. That would hurt my heart. My Scottish soul. There's one place where we do ask for your email address, or actually it's not even that, a login. And that's if you want to leave a comment. And that's not because we are spying on you or want to know anything about you, but we just want to slow down spammers because that's a real problem on all blogs is spam. So if you want to, and I encourage you to do this, that makes the site even better. It's a way you can contribute to the free flow of information on the internet. So please do. All you have to do is let's say you want to add to that discussion of how the speed tests work and the internet works. And I bet you there's engineers out there who say, well, oh, Leo, you got that a little bit wrong. You just go there and you leave a comment. And all you have to do, you can log in with your Google, your Twitter, your Facebook. It's one of those single sign-on things. So it's pretty quick. You press a button, boom, you're in. And that just keeps spammers at bay. We don't use that information in any way. You will not get an email from me. I promise you. TechGuyLabs.com. Enough self-promotion. Let me get on with the show. John in Indianapolis, Indiana. Hello, John.
Hello, Mr. LaPorte. How are you, sir?
I am well. How are you?
Incredible. My wife just bought a brand new HP laptop from QVC, and I'm afraid to surf the internet because of viruses and what have you. And you said the first thing you should do is operate as a non-administrator and image your computer. What are the things I should do?
Oh, that's
there?
A great question. Yeah. I would say the easiest way to remember this is update. Okay? We're going to give you an acronym, and each of these letters will be one thing you'll need to do. And by the way, I got to give credit to the author of this, which I will do as soon as I can remember his name. But the U, and this is also on the website. It's actually a cybercrime expert who wrote a great book called Future Crimes. And you can find this at the Future Crimes website if you want to know more information, which I think is futurecrimesbook.com. Yeah, I think that's it. Futurecrimesbook.com. And he came up with the update acronym as an easy way to tell people what they need to do to stay safe. Mark Goodman, that's his name, Mark Goodman. So the update acronym starts with U, which is update. Probably the single most important thing you can do in keeping yourself safe is making sure that you're using Windows. And so Windows Update will update every second Tuesday of the month. But anytime there's an update, make sure it's applied rapidly, because anytime there's a security patch on an operating system, it's an announcement to the bad guys. We have found a flaw. And the bad guys immediately pounce on the update and say, let's see if we can figure out what it is. And usually within a week or so, they have, and they're going to start attacking machines on the internet. So very important, update frequently. P is passwords. And I'm going to refer you to his tips page because this is fairly complicated, but the basics are You can't reuse passwords. You should not make a password something easy to remember, like your dog's name and your birthday, because easy to remember is easy to guess. And bad guys are very good at using something called brute force to guess passwords. So ideally, my suggestion with passwords is use a password manager. Let it, something like LastPass, 1Password, there's quite a few of them. Let it generate and remember your passwords. That way you won't have to. They can be long and strong. And whenever you can use two-step or two-factor authentication, especially for things like your email and your bank, do that. That's where you get a text message or you get an app on your phone that says, in addition to your password, here's 6 digits you need to enter. That immensely improves security. That's the P, passwords. D, update. Download software only from trusted parties. In fact, I'd say install as few applications as you need. Don't install too much stuff. Do not, as you said, do not run as administrator. This is true on Windows and Mac. It's always better to create a limited user or a standard user account and only use the administrator account when you need to install software. All that is a speed bump. It means you have to think twice before you just say, oh, yeah, thank you, I'll install that. You have to enter your password. You have to think about it. It's always a good idea. Plus, when bad guys do get on your system, they operate with whatever permissions you have. If you're not an administrator, there's nothing they can do. Now, Mark says, turn off your computer when you're not using it. That's the D in update. I don't think you need to do that. True, you can't be hacked when you're off, but let's just not worry about it, turning it off. And finally, encrypt, and this is really true. On a Macintosh, turn on File Vault. Windows, unfortunately, Home does not come with full disk encryption. If you have Pro, turn on BitLocker. And otherwise, you know, encrypt it whenever you can, because if somebody gets your laptop, gets the hard drive, they can get the data off of it, and you don't want them to do that. So I'll give you a link to futurecrimesbook.com in our show notes. Click the tips button and read the update protocol, because I think he nailed it with this one. I think it's very, very good, and it is something every computer owner should just kind of have in the back of their mind. I'm going to tell you, though, a state of mind that's really important. I don't want people to be mistrustful or cynical, but you need to be. Just kind of in the back of your mind. It's the same thing with phone calls. When you get a call and somebody says, hey, I'm calling from Microsoft, I need to get access to your computer, be a little mistrusting, because it isn't Microsoft and you don't want to ever give anybody access to your computer. Same thing with software. When you're running along on the internet and somebody pops up a window on your page that says, oh, your Adobe Flash is out of date, download it here, take a breath. Because that's exactly the trick bad guys will use to get you, to trick you into running a malware program that installs malware in your machine. Don't download software. Don't click on links that you didn't explicitly go out and ask for. And I would add to that, don't download software unless you know you want it and it's from a really good trusted source and you're getting it from that webpage, adobe.com for Flash, not from, you know, getyourflashhere.com. That's not it. It's really important to keep these things in mind. It is safe to be on the internet. You might notice I didn't mention antivirus software. Windows 10 comes with a very good antivirus. I do not recommend third-party antivirus. And that comes under the line, don't install unnecessary software. A, you got an antivirus. B, we know this is a big problem. Antivirus software often becomes a pathway for viruses into your machine. In order for antiviruses to work, they have to operate at a very low level on your machine. They have to be administrators and operate in deep system memory, hook right into your kernel. And if they're not perfect, and no software is perfect, if they're not perfect, a bad guy can use them. We've seen this happen with both Norton and McAfee. A bad guy can use them to get into your system. So in my opinion, putting antivirus on your system makes you less secure. You've got Windows Defender. That's Microsoft's antivirus. Comes with Windows 10. It's already there. And by the way, Microsoft, knowing that bad guys sometimes use antivirus software, they've done something no one else has done. They just did this a couple of weeks ago. They sandboxed Defender. That means they isolate it from the rest of the system. And that's to keep people from using it to get in your system. This is brilliant. It's all you need. So notice, update does not include antivirus. The A in update is not antivirus. It's run as do not run as administrator. Really, I think, important as well. Don't install anything you don't absolutely need. The fewer programs on your system, the harder it's going to be for a bad guy to find a hole. All right, I have to take a little break. We will come back. We'll answer more of your calls. 888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Line 4, BJ, West Deptford, New Jersey. It's Burn Tech on the line. Hey, Burn Tech.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
In our chat room. Good to talk to you.
Yes. It's been a long time watching.
Thank you.
Yes, I have a Verizon tablet. It was from a cell account, but that account has been closed.
Yeah.
I was wondering, can you, like a desktop, you can wipe out the desktop and put a new operating system on. Is there a version of OS for doing that for a tablet?
You don't need to change the OS, actually. What you should do is look on the tablet for, you've seen it on your phone, that little SIM slot, right? It's got a little hole. And pop that SIM, that's a Verizon SIM in there, and you, now, there may be some limits on this, but you could put a SIM from a different carrier in there. The trick is if Verizon has SIM locked it, a lot of, they do that with phones, you know. But Verizon, remember, signed a deal with the FCC saying they wouldn't do that anymore.
Okay.
Now, that applies to phones. I'm going to assume it applies to the tablet with LTE connection. So I would say you probably could just pop in another SIM card. If it does not work, if it says, no, this will only work with Verizon, you go back to Verizon and say, unlock this. And they are legally required to do so because you paid for it outright. You're still in good standing. Whatever, they have to unlock it for you. But I don't think you're going to need to unlock it because I know with phones you don't.
Okay. Well, this wasn't my tablet. It was my mother's. She passed away a year ago.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. So that may be a little trickier, but if you tell them that, and then they will say, okay, I need the IAMI number, or they'll say, you know, they'll need some identifying information. But I don't think you're going to need to unlock it. I'm going to guess that a phone and a tablet, from the point of view of the FCC, is no difference. They're not allowed to lock their phones. In fact, that's one of the reasons I tend to buy Verizon iPhones, because it's the iPhone that works with everything.
Right.
So I would guess it's the same with the tablet. You don't need to change the operating system.
Okay. Well, it's just that it's all Verizon labeled and everything.
It's an Android. I presume it's an Android device.
Yeah.
If you want to, you probably can put a more neutral version of Android on there. What I would suggest, the best place to find out if you can do this is XDA Developers, which is a great forum for Android folks. XDA-developers.com. And the way you use it is you search for that device, and you want to be as specific as you can. If you have a device number, a designation, it'll probably be in the About This Device part of the settings. Enter that in, and you'll see there will be a section of the site devoted to that device, and usually instructions there on how to put a neutral version of Android or a third party. There are lots of different kind of custom Androids out there, because it's open source. So if you can hack that thing, the information will be there at XDA Developers.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah, thank you, Leo.
Yeah, I'm sorry about your mom. It's great to talk to you, though, and I'll see you in the chat room.
Yep.
Take care, Burn Tech. One of our regular chatters. It's nice. It's always nice to put a face with a name. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a little time out. More of your calls coming up right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, laboring in the minds of the tech industry. 8888, Ask Leo. The phone number. On we go to John in Orange, California. Hello, John.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm great. Thanks for hanging on.
No problem. So I have a question about VPN. I go to Cal State Fullerton, and I use the school Wi-Fi a lot, and I was just wondering, do you think I would need a VPN, or should I be pretty safe with school Wi-Fi?
Well, you know, it just depends on the school. You're going Cal State Fullerton, you said?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's a good school, and I would imagine they have good security practices, but there's always a risk. I have to say, open Wi-Fi has gotten better. It used to be, if you were on any open Wi-Fi network like the one at your school, anybody else on that network could see you. So the first thing to do, and I always do this at a hotel or whatever, is launch a program. I usually launch iTunes because I have a Mac. And you can put iTunes on Windows. Launch it and see if you see anybody else's iTunes library. Because a lot of people have music sharing on their iTunes library. If you can, that's an insecure network. You could also, if you're more sophisticated, run tools like Wireshark and go out and see, or Nmap and see, Can you see other people's file shares? If you can, you're on an insecure network. And now, you know, I'm figuring you got some great IT guys and they probably have locked it down, but it would be worth seeing. And if you can, then it's up to you to lock it down. And that's exactly when you use a VPN. There are downsides to VPNs, though. In general, you're going to slow you down a little bit. What a VPN is instead of just going out on the public internet from Cal State, you're going to go out on the public internet from a VPN. You're going to surf securely through a secure tunnel to the VPN provider's servers. And most VPN providers have servers all over the country, all over the world in most cases. So you'll go there, and that's where you'll emerge on the internet. And anything between you and the VPN provider is private. So nobody on the campus network, for instance, can see anything you're doing, including file shares. I should mention, though, choose your VPN provider carefully because they can be a security problem. There's a lot of VPN providers who will inject ads into your feed. You know, if they're really cheap, yeah, I'd be worried about them. They may be logging your traffic, in which case, if they get a subpoena from law enforcement, let's say you're innocently running BitTorrent on your network, and the Motion Picture Association sees that, they go to your VPN provider. If the VPN provider is logging your traffic, they can hand over your information. So you want a VPN provider that is highly secure themselves. You're just basically transferring the security from the guys at Cal State Fullerton to some company out there. So the choice of VPN company is really important. In fact, unless you're absolutely sure this is a great VPN company, or you're using your own VPN server at home or something like that, I'd say you probably should trust Cal State Fullerton better because, you know those guys have your best interests in heart, right? So that's something, yeah. All of that's something to be kind of aware of. But a VPN is very useful. You know, a lot of times you're at a coffee shop or, you're traveling around and you don't know what's going on with the VPN, with the open internet. You might really want to have a VPN provider just in case. But again, choose wisely. Because they, in effect, they're now responsible for your security. And we've seen all sorts of flaws in VPNs, badly configured, from badly configured to actually malicious. Most of the time when you're surfing nowadays, you're surfing securely. For instance, you're logging into your Gmail, that's secure. You're logging into Facebook, that's secure. Twitter, that's secure. Most websites, you'll see HTTPS. Google's really been pushing that. If you go to https://techguylabs.com, that's secure. And that means the people who are running your network can see that you went to Tech Guy Labs, but they can't see any of the traffic. So they'll know the sites you've been to, but they won't know what's going on. So you're secure in that regard. And a malicious guy on your network, you're the guy in the dorm down the hall from you, he can't do anything with that traffic. He can see where you're going. He can't do anything with that traffic. So all of these things are something to pay attention to. I generally don't use VPN unless I'm in a compromised place. And for instance, let's say I go to the big hacker convention in Vegas, DEF CON. I'm not bringing a laptop there anyway. I'm using a burner phone. I'm not bringing anything with private information on it because that place is infested with elite hackers. There's all sorts of things. You ever hear of the word Stingray? These are devices.
Yeah,
government devices that hackers have access to now that impersonate cell phone sites. So you're going along thinking you're secure on your cell phone, and they're sitting in the middle watching all the stuff you're doing. These are all attacks that can happen. So it's a really good idea. I think you're right thinking along these lines. What are you studying?
That's a good question. Still getting generals out of the way.
Yeah. You think you might want to do computer science?
I don't know. I'm not too... It's interesting, but I don't think I could do it.
Not geeky enough, huh?
No.
You might surprise yourself. These are good questions. Yeah, take an intro. You might enjoy it, especially computer programming. It turns out it's. I know you're thinking, oh, my math isn't good enough, but there's some math. But if you've got Algebra 2 under your belt, it's fun. It's fun. And you may say, oh... Bill Gates famously said, you got 4 years to figure out if you're a good programmer. If you're not a good programmer in 4 years, you're never going to be a good programmer. I don't know if that's true, but It's worth a try. You may find it's something you really love. I wouldn't worry too much on a campus network. You're going to a very good school with, I'm sure, good IT people who are making sure that everything is as private as can be. And there are ways that they can prevent people from kind of coming into your computer and stuff like that over the network. I'm sure they're doing that. Most universities do now.
All
good,
right.
Good question, though.
I heard yesterday that I was listening yesterday, you talked about Cloudflare. Could you explain more about that?
That's an interesting one for your Mac, for any computer, phone now, or tablet, iOS or Android. Cloudflare is a great company. Really like them. And one of the things they offer is 1.1.1.1. You can go there in your web browser. 1.1.1.1. There's an app for iOS and an app for Android. It's not a full VPN because it doesn't encrypt your traffic. But what it does do is hide the names of sites you're going to from your cell carrier or your Wi-Fi provider. So they can't see. You're using Cloudflare's DNS server instead of Cal State Fullerton's or Verizon's DNS server. When you use an internet service provider's DNS server, they see every site you ping. And it's a lot of them, by the way. With 1.1.1.1 running on iOS or Android, or you could set it up, they tell you how to set it up on a machine, on a computer. They won't see that. And in theory, you'll get faster DNS, which may mean faster web surfing because Cloudflare is a very powerful server company that's all over the world with servers everywhere. Yeah, it's worth checking out. There's another one called Quad Nines, 9.9.9.9, that also protects your privacy. But I know Cloudflare. I trust Cloudflare. John Graham Cumming, their CTO, is a good friend. So I would trust them. 1.1.1.1. You can find out more about that.
All right. Well, that helps a lot. Thank you.
My pleasure. And by the way, I believe Firefox and Google now are going to put VPNs in their browsers, which is a really interesting way to do this. If it's not, I'll have to check and see if it's out now. If it's not out now, it's coming soon. Just so your browsing would be secure. Not other stuff you do on the net, but the browsing would be secure. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. We got, I'm sorry to say, one more segment before the show wraps up. But we will we'll finish up with a bang. I'm going to talk to Carol in Newport Richey, Florida. Her grandson's got an iPad. Rich in Albany, New York. He's got an old MacBook. And maybe you too. One more segment to go. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, actually don't. Opera stopped doing their VPN. It never was a VPN. So I don't. Opera is not a safe solution.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Big Pee-wee.
Man, you know, can I tell you something? I truly enjoy your show, man. I sit here and I am learning so much.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it, Damien. Are you a geek?
Because we need I wouldn't say I am.
You will be.
I mean, a lot of the stuff that you were just talking about right now, I never knew anything about, but it's like, it's so interesting.
Thank you. You're so kind. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. You're very kind. What shows were you working on before?
Before I came over here, I was doing terrestrial radio. I was working over at Stevie Wonder Station.
Oh, how fun. Did Stevie ever come by?
I'm
so jealous. I bought like fourth row tickets to the Songs in the Key of Life concert when he did it up here at Oakland. It was the best concert I've ever seen. It was, oh man, I've seen Stevie twice. He's incredible. Except for did he come in and do the DJ chick chick boom?
Yes, he did. Yes. He wants to be.
I could
DJ,
tell.
It's
so funny. Oh, how funny. Oh, you have to tell me some Stevie stories.
Oh, yeah. I got tons of them.
Awesome. All right.
Yeah.
Thanks, Damien.
No doubt. Thank you.
Great music from our musical director, Big Pee-wee, or as he's better known, DJ Chick Chick Boom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's last segment of the show, but I have lots to talk about here. So let's go to Carol in Newport Richey, Florida, for our next call. Hi, Carol.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thank you so much for asking.
Thank you for asking me. Now, what can I do to make your day better?
My grandson is 10 and a half years old, and I think it's time that he gets a laptop computer because he had an iPad and he just broke it, and it was really bad, even though I had got the best protection for that iPad.
They break. They're made of glass. They're slippery.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's easy. You know, our son has had iPads, and he's very, very careful. He's 15. He's very, very careful. But one day, he unbuckled his seatbelt, and it snapped back, and it hit his iPad. He was so upset. It cracked the glass. These things happen. The things are fragile. And yeah, you could put it in a hard rubber case. Still can get, you know, you can't protect the glass. So, I'm sorry. Is he, tell me a little, yeah, of course it did. Of course it did. And you think he wants a laptop?
Well, I thought actually a desktop I thought would be better for him.
Okay.
Because it would be there. He wouldn't be able to take it out. And
smart.
Because there's no protection, I don't think, for a lab, you know.
Yeah, laptops are easy to break, too. You're right. And the other advantage of a desktop with young people is you can put it in a fairly public area, not their bedroom. But somewhere where people are walking by, that kind of keeps him on the straight and narrow.
Right.
You know, people know what he's up to, so he's not going to be getting in trouble on the internet, that kind of thing. So I think it's nice to have a desktop in it doesn't have to be in the family room, but somewhere where people are walking by once in a while.
Right.
So there you go. So a desktop. Now,
I'd like it to be game compatible because he likes to play games.
He likes to game. So pretty much that eliminates Macintosh, Chrome OS, both of which I think are very good for young people, but you're going to get a Windows PC. Do you have? Yeah, because that's the gaming platform. And be prepared because he's now, like our 15-year-old, going to be asking you, oh, Nana, can I get a game? And you say, well, if you clean up the yard and you wash the dishes and you walk the dog, maybe.
Okay.
It's the only good of it is it gives you some leverage.
Right.
So how much do you want to spend on this?
Well, I don't want to get him a cheap one, but I don't want to get him a very expensive one. Yeah,
gaming,
I want to get him a good one.
Gaming's demanding. I mean, it requires a little more heft than, right. So you can't get him a $500 desktop. It won't do the job. But I think if you're willing to spend $1,000 to $1,500, is it that too much or is that in the ballpark?
I'd say $1,000.
Okay. Remember, you're going to get you need with a desktop to also get a monitor, and you need to get a keyboard and a mouse. And he'll come up with other things to get later, like speakers. Sure. You probably need speakers. He'll want, and this is fortunately not super expensive, instead of speakers, you might want to get him a gaming headset that has a microphone and headphones. Because even if he's a little young for it now, but sooner or later he's going to want to play Fortnite and games that require sound and communication. Dell makes
He had an Xbox, too.
Yeah, an Xbox is a great choice for gaming. Frankly,
he had an Xbox. He does have an Xbox, but something got messed up along the lines where he was playing online with other children or people.
Yeah.
And something was wrong. He can't. The last person that used their debit card to buy him or use whatever, however that works, they got a new debit card and it wouldn't allow them to purchase anything, and it said that the person had to have the old debit card.
That one you can fix. You can call Microsoft, walk them through it. They'll fix that for you.
Call Microsoft?
Yeah.
Okay.
That Xbox Microsoft support can fix that for you. The Xbox is a better gaming system. He's much less likely to get in trouble. You know, downloading malware or anything, you just can't. And so if he likes that Xbox, what you might you might say, look, we're going to get that Xbox working. You can continue to play games on that. It's what I use. I love it. And then for stuff like homework, because he's getting to the age now where he's going to want to use the internet to research and write papers and stuff, I would get him an inexpensive Chromebook or Chrome. You can get a desktop Chrome box, they call them. And that will be a little safer for him. It does not, in fact, allow gaming, but it's much more secure. And the good news, it's a lot less expensive.
Okay.
So this is based on not Mac or Windows, but something Linux, something Unix, I'm sorry, something Google calls Chrome OS, which is based on Linux, but it's a very secure operating system. And it's exactly what a lot of schools use for schoolwork. So it's a good schoolwork choice.
Okay.
But it is not going to be any fun for him. It's not a good gaming choice. So what I want to, I think the best choice is to get the Xbox working. You already have that. And then get a Chrome OS-based desktop computer. And they're not very expensive. Acer has a very nice one. They call it a Chrome Base for $448.
So Acer Chrome
Base.
Base.
And you can get that on Amazon if you want. They're very good. And that's more secure. He's going to say, oh, Nana, but I can't. But it's good for homework. It's good for browsing. It's good for email. And then use the Xbox for gaming. I think that's a better. I really think that's better.
Yeah, because he was saying to me, okay, I don't want the Xbox anymore. I want the other one.
Yeah, well.
I forgot the name of the other one.
PlayStation 4. You actually get some really good deals on Sony PlayStations now. So maybe that's.
PlayStation 4.
Yeah, you can get there. There are the PlayStation 4 Slim is on big discount. In fact, a lot of this stuff. This is your timing is good because of Black Friday.
Right.
There are some. I would look at a Chrome base and a PlayStation 4 together will cost less than $1,000.
Okay, then I guess I will do that because he's really frustrated over the Xbox.
Yeah.
He doesn't live with me.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know much about this technology stuff.
But you're a good grandma.
I try to be.
You're definitely a good grandma. That is a really nice gift. You can get the Sony PlayStation 4 with the Spider-Man game at Target for $200 now.
Really?
Yeah.
I guess I'll be going to do that.
Yeah. Now he's going to want a lot of games because he's moved to a different platform. None of the Xbox games work on the PlayStation 4. So you're buying all new games, but if he says I want a PlayStation 4, that's fine. You know, that's a wonderful gaming device. And
okay.
then it's safer to have him play games on that thing. It's also cheaper, frankly.
Okay.
And then if he needs computing power, Chrome OS.
Yeah, he needs the computer because
for school.
Yeah, he needs it for school. He's 10 and a half, going to turn 11.
It's time. He's going into fifth grade. This is when you start writing reports, doing research. And most schools use Chromebooks, laptops, because they're inexpensive, but they're secure. And it's a really good choice for education, I think.
Right. Okay, so I got that down.
Yay, Carol. Happy shopping.
Thank you so much for all your help. I really appreciate it. And I have to say that I love listening to you because you have a very nice voice over the radio.
Thank you.
I sit there and I listen to you, even though I don't even know what half the technology is.
By osmosis, it will all sink in.
I have bought the X phone from Apple.
Good.
When they first came out.
The iPhone 10, yeah.
I don't even know how to use that phone.
We'll do that another day. You call me back and we'll talk about that. Hey, we're out of time. Thanks to Kim Schaffer. Thanks to Big Pee Wee. Thanks to you for being here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.